21st century. Segregation yesterday, segregation today, segregation forever! Woof, huh? Hey, I gotta get out of here. Bye, y'all! Kinda let it all slip by me. Rick Smith is next! See ya!
As always, always, always.
Gee. I'd sing out a warning. I'd sing out love between my brothers and my sisters.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk about Wisconsin. We're going to talk about Ohio. We're going to talk about corporations not paying their fair share. Right work. So much more representation. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts on all of this stuff. We're going to have Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, telling us what's going on in Columbus as they rammed through, and in really a very bizarre fashion, their hate bill. Lee Fong from the Think Progress blog is going to be here talking about the Koch brothers and where they've made all their money. Look, you know, they've spent a lot of money propping up political candidates. They've spent a lot of money forming public opinion. And what it's done is it's benefited their bottom line. So the more money that we give to the upper crust, the more that they use it for their good, not yours. Our good friend, attorney Irwin Aronson, is going to be here to talk a little bit about right to work. Wisconsin State Representative Nick Milroy, we spoke to him last Thursday, you'll remember, from the Capitol there. He did something today that, you know, you got to give him credit for. If the governor is not going to let his constituents into the people's house, not going to let him into the office of the representative took his office outside into the cold. So it'll be interesting to talk to him as we move along tonight. The big story, I guess, you know, it's one of those things where you hate to be right. And I hate the fact that I'm siding with these psychopaths at the Westboro Baptist Church. I've said it a number of times. I hate the idea of it. It's wrong. It's stupid. But you know what? It is the First Amendment. The Supreme Court ruled today, 8-1, that the insane, radical, extremist church, who, you know, I despise, that their protests were, in fact, protected speech. John Roberts wrote the majority. He said, quote, what Westboro said in the whole context of how and where it chose to say it is entitled to special protection under the First Amendment, and that protection cannot be overcome by a jury finding that the picketing was outrageous. The only person who was against it was Samuel Alito. But here's the thing that bothers me. They're going to see their coffers full. And I got to be honest, it sickened me to think that these people were able to sue and able to fill their coffers so that they're going to be able to do this kind of stuff more frequently. My fear now, and I'm surprised it hasn't happened to this point, is that it's going to turn really ugly. Or hopefully we continue to ignore these crazy people as we have done in the past, thus marginalizing them, and maybe we can stop talking about it. Maybe they're just, you know, it's the crazy guy on the street with the sandwich board who's in the end of the world's coming, or the guy who's on the street corner shaking his Bible at us. You look at him and you move on. Hopefully that's what we'll be able to do. So good news coming out of Wisconsin today. Again, you know, you can leave it to a Democrat to show up late to the party, but the Wisconsin Democratic Party is now launching a campaign to recall 8 of the Republicans who have aligned themselves with Scott Walker and this bizarre bill that they've come forth with. And as we talked about last night, Governor Walker's only 2 months into this term. He can't be recalled until at least 2012, which I think is a very real possibility. And I'm hoping that this is something that we remember and that the folks there go after. But if you recall these 8, because there are 33 senators in the Wisconsin Senate. If you recall 8 of them, I'm sure you're going to be able to change the complexity of the current Republican 19-14 majority there in the Senate, or at least change the insanity level. Because I look at this and I go, you know, at some point, don't we have to have rational people, rational thought? So the Wisconsin Democratic Party sent out an email today stating, this morning, citizens from around the state took the first steps by filing recall papers against key Republican senators who have stood with Scott Walker and pushed his partisan power grab that will strip thousands of middle-class teachers, nurses, librarians, and other workers of their rights. They went on to say, in 60 days, you can take Wisconsin back by recalling the Republican senators who have decided to push Scott Walker's divisive attack on the rights of workers and his assault on schools, universities, and communities. Now, in Wisconsin, you can recall someone after they've served at least 1 year of their term. And there are 8 of them that are in that position. They're eligible to be recalled, and I'm hoping all 8 of them are, because something's got to give there. Now, the Republicans, they've vowed wholeheartedly that they're going to defend the undefendable. So that ought to be interesting to see. And this is, a lot of this is about this idea of, or it's being spun this way. And I don't think it's so much this. I think this is this bill that Walker has put forth, and I've said it before, this is not just about collective bargaining. It's not about that just one piece. It's about, I want it all, and I want it now without compromise. It's a very 2-year-old bill. My 2 or 4-year-old, I can see them saying, you know, doing this, kicking and screaming in the middle of the floor. I want, me. And that's what this is. You've got a guy who's not, he sees himself as some Ronald Reagan figure that never existed. This mythical character that the right has created, and they've slapped a name on it. They've slapped a Reagan name on it. And he thinks he's that. You know, this, you know, gonna stay the course, you know, the Bush figure, if you will. But I think the public has kind of turned on him, because, you know, they've made this about collective bargaining. And believe me, in that bill, there is so much more and so much worse, as well. I mean, it's amazing stuff. And fortunately for the 14 Democrats who took off, and left the state, and good for them, the Fab 14, it gave people an opportunity, you know, to slow down, open up this bill, and go, what's really in this? But what I find interesting, the Wall Street Journal, I understand the Wall Street Journal is the newspaper of the investor class. This is the business newspaper. This is where the muckety mucks, they get their stock tips, they get their information. It's a very highbrow, it's not your USA Today. So when they conduct a poll that says that 62% of the people they polled were either totally or mostly accepting of collective bargaining, that says something. We're talking about the USA. We're talking about the Wall Street Journal poll. And it's amazing to me. Because I do believe that most Americans are in opposition of stealing rights from people. And that's what this whole thing is. This is what this is all about. It's about without any say, without any negotiation, without any fair way of doing this. It's just a stripping of their rights. What I also found funny, interesting about the poll, 77% of the people polled think unionized states, state and municipal employees should have the same rights as those in the private sector. And, you know, I thought about that. Does that mean the right to strike? Because public sector workers, for the most part, don't have that right. You know, we hear about teachers, you know, the teachers have the right to strike. Only for a very short period of time. They still have to get their days of work in. School still has to happen. So, you know, it's interesting, and it's going to be interesting how this plays out down the road. And we've been talking about it here for a while. How's the labor movement? How are progressive groups going to use this to wake people up? Because, you know, I've got union member friends who, for years, thought they were Republicans. For one reason or another, be it abortion, be it gun rights. And look, in Ohio, they're still trying to push the abortion thing. In fact, today they had a fetus testify. They put a pregnant woman up on the stand, and they, you know, put a little scope, little stethoscope on her stomach and said, see, listen to the fetus testify. That's how crazy these folks are. They're running ads of putting a bunny in a blender. Say, see, look what these people are willing to do. They're willing to take this cute bunny and put it in a blender. What that's got to do with abortion, I have no idea, but it's how crazy they've gotten. And it's about dividing. But I think some of the people who, you know, that was their issue, are starting to come around and go, well, wait a second. They're talking about my job. They're talking about how I feed my family, how I put food on the table, how I keep a roof over their head, how I get clothing for them. You know, the whole gun issue was another one of those divisive things. And I think people are starting to, I'm hoping, you know, some of my friends are coming around. You know, I had a couple of people tell me, you know, Rick, you're right. You were right up until this election. The crazy people have taken over. And Scott Walker has done that. So now, what do we have to do? Well, obviously, what we have to do is we have to stand up, fight back, and have our voices heard, which means bringing yourself out to the Capitol every once in a while, make up a sign, do something. That's why tomorrow, Thursday, March 3rd at 1 p.m., there's going to be a news conference opposing Tom Corbett's, our governor's, $833 million corporate tax giveaway. It's going to be in the Capitol Rotunda here in Harrisburg. Mike Sterla, representative, is going to be there. A bunch of other progressive and labor leaders. And as the press release says, while Pennsylvania is facing a $4 billion deficit, our governor's approved a corporate tax break of almost a billion, $833 million last week. So at this time, you got to wonder. And you look at what went on Monday, pushing through the voucher thing, talking about another $1 billion there. What kind of deep, painful, draconian cuts in other programs are we going to see moving forward? So I'm telling you, you got to get involved. You've got to stay. You got to stay on top of these things, and that's why you listen to the Rick Smith Show. We'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, questions, ideas. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We are right back after this with Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. We're back after this.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News, Doug Cunningham. As Governor Scott Walker and Republicans at Wisconsin's Capitol turn what had been the police velvet glove into more of a state patrol steel fist, police and firefighters continue to stand in solidarity with their public worker brothers and sisters protesting in Madison. When the Capitol lockdown began Sunday afternoon, among the protesters staying after the deadline and risking arrest for the cause of collective bargaining was Maylin Mitchell. Mitchell is president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin.
Well, we're staying united with people that we've been united with from the get-go. We have firefighters actually scattered all around here. We're mingling with our brothers and sisters. We're done pretty much every day this week. We also have cops here as well. This has been a peaceful rally from the start. It continues to be a peaceful rally. There's nobody here agitating anybody. And so I would hope that they continue to let the people speak like they have for the week and continue to let us have a peaceful rally.
Mitchell says that firefighters are here to stay and see this struggle through with their brothers and sisters in other unions.
We've had firefighters here all night, all week. I mean, we're doing it in shifts. As long as people are in the Capitol, you will continue to see a firefighter presence among the other brothers and sisters in a union.
Madison Police Officer David McClurg was one of the many police officers also with the protesters risking arrest as the Capitol was to be cleared. They were wearing Cops for Labor shirts.
We came realizing that, you know, at 4 o'clock that we may be arrested and fully accepting that. We feel it's an important enough thing to do, and we stand with all the people here, and we just hope that someone in the Republican Party in Wisconsin has what it takes to realize that this is just plain wrong.
Officer McClurg says he was particularly disgusted by Governor Scott Walker admitting he had thought about planting troublemakers in the peaceful crowd of tens of thousands of pro-labor demonstrators.
I'm disgusted by it. I can't believe that anybody within the state of Wisconsin can't see that and see the lack of honesty and the immoral, you know, acts of our governor. I mean, as a police officer, as someone who upholds, you know, the Constitution of Wisconsin, and I'm shocked by it.
Dane County Sheriff David Mahoney has withdrawn his deputy sheriffs from guarding the Capitol doors, saying that his officers are not part of any palace guard and will not block the Capitol doors to the public. Wisconsin's Republican state senators have voted to fine Democratic senators $100 a day for each day they continue to stay away from the Capitol. Democrats are defending collective bargaining rights for public workers, refusing to return from Illinois until the attack on collective bargaining is eliminated. And in another development, it was reported by a protester inside the Capitol that the private security firm DCI is being used inside. Governor Walker's office did not return our call asking to confirm or deny that report. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Don't have a phone? Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
There's a thundercloud exploding, and I'm free at last. Like Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. Like our brothers and our sisters, up and down that picket line. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. The Ohio State Senate's Commerce, Insurance, and Labor Committee today did something kind of interesting. One of the guys on the committee was going to vote against the bill, the GOP amendment to the bill. So what'd they do? They yanked him off, replaced him with somebody else who would vote the right way. And I go to my Tea Party friends, you know, is this how you want government run? Our way or the highway? Amazing stuff. It's just nuts. What's going on across this country is, well, I guess it's good for labor. I guess this is that wake up call. This is that time where maybe people are paying attention. I've got Tim Berga on the line, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Tim, thanks for taking time for me.
No problem.
You know, I look at what's going on in Ohio, and it looks just nuts. This, I guess you can do it, but you pull somebody off who disagrees with you and replace him with someone who's going to vote for you. Seems kind of nuts to me.
Well, what happened today was a complete disregard for the will of the people in Ohio. We had Ohioans from all walks of life over the last several weeks come out in ways in which people never saw before, rise up, say, we're not going to go along with this. We ought to be focusing on working together to create jobs instead of punishing teachers and firefighters and nurses. And it's going to have the counter effect that that we would want at this point on our local communities. It's going to be devastating. And it was a political power grab and a complete disregard for what Ohioans want to see happen at this time, at this important time.
Is this legal, though? I mean, is it something along Ohio law there that you can have someone on a committee, and just because they're not going to vote how the president wants or the chairman wants, you can yank them off and replace them?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty to look at in terms of legality within Senate Bill 5, but procedurally, they were within the rules. So, but again, it just shows the arrogance when you have your own Senate colleagues on their side of the aisle, the Republican side of the aisle, that didn't want to go along with Governor Kasich on this thing, and seasoned veteran legislators that they just yanked off the committee because they were worried about that this was going to have a negative impact on police and fire's ability to bargain for the type of equipment they need, bulletproof vests, fire equipment. There was going to be no understanding of ability for dispute resolution. It's going to eliminate worker rights at so many levels. And some of the scenes that Republicans understood that and joined with every single Democrat. However, it just in the end wasn't enough. And the political maneuvering was, if people really understood what was going on, they'd be outraged by it. But they know what happened today was wrong. And there's going to be a backlash at some point. Now, I can tell you that Ohioans are paying attention. Middle-class, hardworking Buckeyes understand that this was punitive and has nothing to do about balancing budgets, and it sure as heck isn't creating any jobs.
You know, and that's the important part, because all along, up until the November elections, all the Republicans kept talking about is, we know how to create jobs, we know how to balance budgets. This kind of punitive action, SB 5 in Ohio, the thing Scott Walker's doing in Wisconsin, does nothing to do either. In fact, it makes both worse.
Well, it does. And instead of trying to work together and investing in our basic industries and our industrial workforce that's been sold to the lowest bidders in countries like China and Mexico and other countries and markets that pay poverty wages, instead of trying to get a handle on that, reindustrialize Ohio, reindustrialize America, get our middle class back to our private sector workers back on the job and back in the middle class, that's what we should be focusing on. If we get that piece right, if we start to make movement in that area and start building and construction again and manufacturing again, public budgets will take care of themselves. So simply depressing wages, taking away workers' rights is going to be have a counter effect. It's only going to make matters worse in our local communities.
So now that SB 5 has passed, where does it go from here? Where are you in the process?
Well, it goes over to the House. Yeah, best guess is because the Republicans and Kasich controlling the agenda are not letting us in on their secrets about procedural stuff. Best guess is sometime next week it'll go before the House, and they will quickly run it through. I mean, they're not planning to have any more hearings and testimony. They'll simply look to get it to the floor as quickly as possible. And, it's going to be very difficult to stop because of the political will of the governor to do this thing, even though the public support's not there. They want to get it done. Their ultimate hope is to get it done before April 6th, signed into law. That way it forces our hand and others that don't like Senate Bill 5 to go on the ballot this year to try to overturn it.
You know, your Senate president there, Tom Niehaus, yesterday said something I thought was really telling. There were, tens of thousands of people in the Capitol and on the Capitol grounds screaming and chanting and having their voices heard. And he said, it's great to see so many people out here having their voices heard, but it's not going to change our resolve any. Basically, we don't care. And obviously, they didn't.
They did. And I can honestly say that not just organized labor, but workers of all types that are in the middle class or aspire to be in the middle class understand this is a political power grab that's going to hurt them and their local communities. And they're showing up in ways that many of us have never seen. 20,000 people at the State House yesterday. And all of the letters to the editor, the dominant letters are against Senate Bill 5. The phone calls, the emails, the actions back in cities all across Ohio, outraged at what's happening. Police and firefighters, nurses, teachers, highway workers, sanitation workers. And what's really been grateful is not just public sector employees, but our sisters and brothers in the building trades and in the industrial community and folks that aren't even involved in a union and students and community action organizations all see this for what it is, a political power grab, doesn't do anything to be focusing on creating jobs, and it's going to make matters worse.
And it's a very Machiavellian move. It's gutting your political enemy in public. And that's, to me, that's what it really is about. It's about having that power, yes, but it's about destroying any opposition whatsoever.
Well, Ohioans desperately want to see a balanced approach to try to solve the deep problems that we have in this state. And a shared sacrifice would be a good way to start. And so far, the only sacrifice have been our private sector employees that have lost their job because it's been outsourced or offshore. And as a result, our public employees who are making concessions on pay, on benefits, on unpaid leave, on retirement security, you name it, public employees have been making concessions. And we know that our private sector, industrial workers and others, have been taking it on the chin for far too long. So, we need shared sacrifice and, we're not seeing that. It's simply more of the self-proclaimed elitists that are sticking up for them and the Wall Street investor class and the heck with the worker economy and the working class. So, we're going to keep fighting. And if we have to go to referendum to overturn it, that's what we'll do as well.
Yeah, I'm hoping that happens. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. You talked a second ago about shared sacrifice, and we keep hearing this theme over and over again. That, you know, well, you know, times are tough. We need to tighten our belts a little bit. Yet I see last week in USA Today, for the wealthy, luxury is back. I see bonuses on Wall Street. I see the big bankers filling their pockets. Yet, people like me, people like you, working folks, they're the ones who are being asked to sacrifice. We're balancing budgets on the backs of those who can least afford it. You know, Walker in Wisconsin, stripping almost $1.5 billion from education so he can give out tax handouts to the wealthy. Here in Pennsylvania, Tom Corbett giving out almost $1 billion in corporate handouts. When does it stop? I mean, you know, I'm hoping you guys go to a referendum. I'm hoping you guys can do something. I'm hoping in Wisconsin they recall those 8 senators. How do we use this groundswell of support, this grassroots activism? How do we use this from here forward?
Well, your point is right about tax breaks for the rich and corporate welfare. And when you look in Ohio, there's hundreds of millions of dollars going towards corporate tax breaks and subsidies. Some of it well-intentioned, some of it well-meaning, some of it does help create jobs, but far too much of it is simply corporate welfare. And rather than looking at that, now Governor Kasich wants to repeal the estate tax in Ohio, which takes needed money away from our local government. That's where the money comes from. So it's so wrong on so many levels. You know, we need your listeners. We need anybody that works for a living and takes pride in their job and raising a family and wants to contribute to their local communities. We need everybody to rise up and sustain it. When the vote on Senate Bill 5 is done, that's just the beginning of the effort to have a new movement.
Right.
A new movement where labor is joined by those in the community, non-union as well, community action, social service interested folks, small businessmen and women who know they're going to be hurt when you take out, when you hurt middle-class working families in their communities. They know, and we know small businesses are going to be hurt. So we all need to band together, rise up, and say enough is enough. enough is enough.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But I got to tell you, I think you guys in organized labor have the opportunity of a lifetime right here. Walker has given, and I truly believe this, that Scott Walker has given the labor movement the biggest gift that they could have ever dreamt of. Because I've heard the words collective bargaining more in the last week and a half than I've heard in my entire life. I've seen more polls on labor unions than I think I've ever seen in my life. In fact, you look at the New York Times poll, 62% of the people are with collective bargaining for public sector employees. And in fact, the one part of it where they said a third of the people they surveyed were in favor of labor unions, a quarter were against. Where the opportunity lies is that large section, that 40-some percent that were undecided or didn't feel they knew enough about unions, there is a massive opportunity, especially given the billions of dollars the wealth class has spent on trying to convince workers that unions are bad for them.
Well, you're right. This has done a tremendous amount to educate folks that have a general understanding about unions, but that's about it. It's at the surface level. This has really helped shine a spotlight on all of the balance that organized labor provides to corporate America. And it's really helped and pleasantly surprised that Ohioans and folks across the country, general public, have come to the understanding that unions are necessary to provide that balance that helped to fight for wages and overtime pay and benefits and all those things that help us raise our families and enjoy a middle-class lifestyle. So this, you're right, this has given us a great opportunity to have a deep and meaningful conversation about the value of the trade union movement and organized labor. And it's been very encouraging that folks are showing their support that this is a necessary part of our economy. And they feel very threatened, whether they're in a union or not, that the way that Governor Kasich and Governor Walker are going is simply a power grab for the so-called elitists. And they don't like it, and this is an opportunity for us. So organized labor will do its part to make sure that we can sustain the momentum and keep the education going. And we just need your listeners to understand that this is about working families, and this is about people who are trying to work for a living, do the right thing, nurses, firefighters, highway workers, you name it, folks that are contributing in our communities to provide needed services. And we all need to come together now as the opportunity is here to understand the needed balance that organized labor plays and to make sure that it doesn't go away.
I'm right there with you. Right there with you, Tim. Last question I've got for you, and it's kind of a history thing because I've asked people a number of times, what did they think when they first heard that Scott Walker was going to call out the National Guard? What was their first thought? And I'll tell you what mine was. We're not too far from Latimer, Pennsylvania, where back in the 1890s, 19 miners were shot in cold blood by sheriff's deputies, ambushed at a ridge where we've been to. That was the first thing that popped into my mind, the state using the power of the gun to mow down workers, you know, just looking to make a better life. I'm curious what your thought was.
Well, too many have come before us and fought, some with their lives, to give us the type of workers' rights and due process we have, and to make Ohio the great place it is to work, live, and raise a family. So many of the folks that were around during some of the earlier confrontations that we've had in Ohio. And let's face it, things were not very good prior to collective bargaining in Ohio, prior to 1983. And, you know, those folks who remember those confrontations, those work stoppages, those strikes, cities on fire, all sorts of things. And, of course, with the National Guard, it invokes all sorts of memories in Ohio for a lot of reasons. Related to war protests and labor unrest and everything. So, you know, it really hits home. It really hits home and not enough and invokes some things that are not the best part of our past.
I agree. Tim Berg, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight there. If there's anything we can do to help, please let us know. Again, I appreciate your time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Scott Walker is a cokehead, one of several super ambitious right-wing politicos who can't get enough of the laissez-faire land hallucinogenics being pushed all across the land by the secretive billionaire Koch brothers. As the GOP's gubernatorial candidate in Wisconsin last year, Walker took $43,000 in campaign cash from the brothers' corporate PAC, plus hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of support from a Koch-funded political front group. Now in office, it's clear that the Gov has also snorted several bags of the Koch's 100% pure anti-worker corporate mindset, for he's pushing maniacally to take away the right of Wisconsin public employee unions to bargain with government bosses like him. Instead of collective bargaining, Walker would reduce these middle-class workers to collective begging, a position of subservience that is the Kochian ideal. What the governor did not anticipate, however, was a jolting side effect of Koch fairy dust, a widespread public revulsion to his actions. Tens of thousands of teachers, firefighters, police officers, and other workers, plus school kids and other supporters, have filled Wisconsin's Capitol building in an unrelenting protest. And, while Walker claims he's only doing what the people want, a 61% majority of Americans say they don't want what he's doing. But there's no use trying to talk reality to a delirious cokehead. With his Capitol in turmoil, the governor blissfully said, "I hope I'm an inspiration to others trying to eliminate worker rights." This is Jim Hightower saying, before you faint from this guy's self-anointed saintliness, note another little provision he very quietly buried in Section 44 of his anti-worker bill. It allows the governor, with no oversight, to sell Wisconsin's publicly owned power plants on a no-bid basis to private corporations. Guess who's in line to profit from this giveaway? The Koch brothers.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Pull out a good old union has come in here to drill. Which side are you on?
You know, and in this, that's the question. Which side are you on in this whole battle? You're on the Koch brothers' side. Do you think you're going to be the next billionaire? You think that widget working on in the garage is going to be you're going to be the next Bill Gates? Or are you a guy who works for a living, goes, put your pants on every day, punches a clock every day, collects that check that's dwindling because everything else is going up? Which side? Our quote of the day comes from Richard Wolff, who we're going to have on the program tomorrow night. He's written an interesting piece, How the Rich Soaked the Rest of Us. It's in The Guardian. You can check it out. He says, quote, a rather vicious cycle has been at work for years. Reduce taxes on the rich, leave them with more money to influence politicians and politics. Their influence wins them further tax reductions, which gives them still more money to put into the political use. When the loss of tax revenue from the rich worsens already strained government budgets, the rich press politicians to cut public services and cut government jobs and not even debate a return to the higher taxes the rich used to pay. And so it goes from Washington to Wisconsin to New York City. And, you know, I got to be honest, he's spot on. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Danny on line one. How are we doing tonight, Danny?
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I'm good.
I'm from Wisconsin. I live in Wisconsin. Wanted to give you a perspective of what some of my neighbors are saying about this budget by Scott Walker and to give you a little bit of insight as well.
Please do.
You know, the fact of the matter is that if people that I talk to, my neighbors, they look at this one way. They don't really care about collective bargaining rights. They say that public employees should be paying just like private sector employees. Their feel is that the economy is hurting. Private sector workers are hurting. They're taking it on the chin. Public sector workers should take it on the chin as well. And when you try and convince people about what collective bargaining brings to the table for workers and workers' rights, they don't want to hear it. They're like, you know, actually I had this debate this morning. Should a person be required to join a union as a condition of employment was the question. And in this state, Wisconsin, it is. You join the union, or you get the job as a public worker, you got to join the union. And I think that's where, at least my neighbors, and I live in a conservative area, are having trouble with the collective bargaining issue. And I did want to say this too. You're absolutely right when you say that the opponent is really kind of taking the unions and the Democrats out to the woodshed in public and kind of spanking them. And in my opinion, I think they should hang on to their money and keep this momentum because Americans have short memories. So you have this fight about collective bargaining, which could last up to 4 or 5 months. That calms down, then you have a presidential election. If things don't go in labor's way, how do you think that 2012 election is going to turn out? How much money are unions going to have left over to contribute? How many more members are they going to be asking for donations to chip in a tough economy for something that they've taken on that is really, really strong? And wait till Illinois gets hit with their pension reform. And I want to see those people go crazy when the Democrats start taking away pensions from people that we're bargained for. And that's coming.
I appreciate the call, Danny.
No problem.
Thanks so much. I look at this, and there's a lot there. The idea of compulsory union, I'm all in favor of. If you want the job, you got to be part of you got to at least pay for the representation that you're getting. And that's the law. You don't have to be a member of the union. But you do have to pay a portion of the cost of being represented. And I've always said the few dollars a month I pay in dues money, has brought me massive reward. I wish every penny that I've ever earned I could put into the same kind of an investment. You know, the $50 a month that I would pay in, gladly into union dues brought me hundreds and hundreds back and better benefits and better wages. So this idea that you know, folks are angry about collective bargaining, I'm not so sure about that. Most of the people that I met when I was in Wisconsin, they seem to get it. The problem is private sector workers have been getting screwed for so many years. They have been being taken out to the woodshed and beaten often that they want other people to be as miserable as they are. I look at this and there's so much here that, you know, I'm hoping that people don't forget what this whole bill is. And the folks that I met, I don't think so. It's going to be an interesting ride, but if I can go back to one thing, the issue is now out there. It's being discussed. And poll after poll after poll shows that people are in favor of collective bargaining, that people are slight majority in favor of labor unions, but with a big area, a large number of people who know nothing about it. There's an opportunity here for education. There's an opportunity here to get the message out. Even with the massive amounts of money the right has spent on trying to convince you don't need a union anymore. You know, my grandfather always said, you know, if a rich guy is going to spend a buck to convince you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. And this is one of those issues. Often, that's all we keep hearing. Well, why should you have to have a union negotiate for you? You can make your own deal. And what's the old saying? There's nothing weaker than the power of one. So the more people you have coming together and negotiating, the better. As far as the benefits for public sector workers, they understand they're going to have to pay more. They understand that they're going to be on the chopping block. Even if, and I can show you poll after poll, study after study, that shows that, you know what? Public sector workers actually make less than they make in the private sector. But that's not going to fly because the mainstream media has done so much to convince us that these state workers, these public workers have it so good. You know, I did a talk show the other day where the guy said, well, you know, I was a teacher and I took a pay cut to take this job. Why should that teacher, you know, get to make more than I make as a talk show host? Well, you're comparing apples and oranges. You know, do I want someone teaching my children who has the education to maybe get a job at McDonald's? Should we be comparing teachers and fast food people? Not that there's anything wrong with working in a fast food restaurant, but on an educational, on an experience, on a professional level, do you want those kind of people teaching your children? And the answer, I believe, is no. You want people who are trained, who are professional. And to get that, you've got to pay folks. But study after study, and there have been a number of them. I was going to go into a couple here, but we've just run out of time. EPA has an interesting one if you want to take a look at it. It's getting the facts straight about state and local pay. They've pointed out that, you know, what we've been told, the frame that we've been told, isn't true. And according to data that on wages for state and local employees, between 90 and 2010, their wages grew about 0.6%. And in the private sector, it grew about 0.7%. So they're kind of even, but the public sector's fallen behind. But that's not what we hear. All we keep hearing is, well, they have pensions. Because they still have, they were able to negotiate for defined benefit pensions. We're just ticked off. And again, I hear this from my friends all the time. My 401k, it got beat up in the market. Why should I have to pay for those people that have pensions? Last thing before we go. Wisconsin's pension system, the statistic I saw, 99.7% funded. That's amazing. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK.
1-888-520-7425.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, Visit AskMe13.org. We are AskMe.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know, at the end of all of this, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. At the end of all of this, it comes down to the frame that workers are the problem, that the big corporations, they're the solution, the workers are the problem. Again, going back to the idea of trickle-down economics, if we give the wealth class everything they could possibly want, we give them everything, that something eventually has to shower down on us. And it hasn't worked. It's been an abysmal failure. And you've got 30 some years of trial and error, and it's mostly been error. And I look at our friends over at Think Progress. They reported that many of the nation's largest corporations pay literally nothing in corporate income taxes. They point out ExxonMobil made nearly $20 billion in profit in 2009 and paid zero, nothing, not a dime in corporate income taxes. They point out other extremely profitable companies like GE, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Boeing, similarly had entire quarters or years without paying a penny in corporate income taxes. And there's this frame. We got it here in Pennsylvania. The corporate tax rate's too high. Here in Pennsylvania, they say 70% of corporations pay zero, nothing. Yet all we keep hearing is how high the corporate tax rates are here in the state of Pennsylvania. Oh, we got the highest rates in the state, highest rates in the country. Oh, the beyond out of this roof, and nobody ever wants to come here. And I ask the question, you know, if you got 70% of the people who aren't paying it, why wouldn't you want to come here? It's a no-tax state, if anything. Anyway, last week, the people over at Think Progress went to the Tea Party Summit out in Arizona, and our friend Lee Fong spoke with former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty. Listen to this. You're going to love this.
Today, liberals are demonstrating all over the country in what CBS has called a liberal version of the Tea Party. Their main complaint is that a lot of corporations aren't paying their fair share. For example, Bank of America in 2009 paid nothing in corporate income taxes, same with ExxonMobil, GE, and a lot of other big corporations. Do you think corporations like Bank of America should pay their fair share? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think actually the corporate tax rate in Minnesota and in the country is too high, and one of the things I think we could and should do.
Do you think zero is too high with Bank of America paying nothing?
We have the highest corporate tax rate, or one of them, in the
But they use loopholes in offshore bank accounts to pay nothing.
Well, one of the things I've called for is reducing tax rates and looking at exemptions or special deals within the tax code that give certain companies privileges or benefits. I can't speak to what any individual country or company.
You know, and again, you know, it's the talking point. All he could keep going back to is the talking point. It's too high. Taxes are too high. Yet you give them specifics, and look, you know, these companies are paying nothing. What do we do to get them to pay something? Well, rates are too high, but they're paying nothing. What's too high about nothing? And yet we keep going back to this, that we need to create jobs through handing out money, massive corporate tax giveaways. And again, tomorrow at 1 o'clock, at the Capitol Rotunda here in Harrisburg, they're going to have a press conference, rally, whatever you want to call it, people hopefully coming together. Representative Mike Sterl is going to be talking, and a bunch of other progressive and labor groups, about the fact that our governor, Tom Corbett, has approved a corporate tax break of $833 million at a time when the state is facing a $4 billion deficit, at a time when they're talking about cutting education. They're talking about $1 billion. They're talking about adding a voucher program that's going to cost $1 billion. Seems to me to be quite dumb, to be honest. Quite dumb. From the Business Insider, Hillary Clinton is saying that Al Jazeera is putting American media to shame. And I agree with her on a certain level. She was defending her department's budget in front of the U.S. Foreign Policy Priorities Committee on C-SPAN. And she says a major reason the State Department needs money is because we are in an information war and we are losing that war. Clinton said private media is not doing a good enough job. And, quote, she says, quote, our private media cannot fill the gap. Our private media, particularly cultural program, often works at counter purposes to what we truly are as Americans. She says, I remember having an Afghan general tell me that the only thing he thought about Americans is that all the men wrestled and the women walked around in bikinis because that's the only TV he ever saw, which was Baywatch and World Wide Wrestling. Meanwhile, she says, Al Jazeera, CCTV, and Russia Today are killing it. She said, quote, Al Jazeera is winning. The Chinese have opened up a global English language and the multi-language television network. The Russians have opened up an English language network. She went on to say, I've seen it a couple of countries, and it's quite instructive. Well, you know, what are you going to do when Al Jazeera is the only one covering what's going on in Egypt? What are you going to do when our media only focuses on things that they can incite people with? Clinton says she is leading an effort to spread the U.S. propaganda through new media with Twitter feeds in Arabic and Farsi. She warns that Republicans want to cut half the State Department budget, and that's going to harm her ability to get out their BS. So I guess you got to give her credit. You know, she's honest. But our media, again, you know, kind of bizarre. And if you look at what's going on in Wisconsin, and we were there for the week, basically you've got Fox News, who was out there, and you got to give them credit. They came out because they wanted to make stuff up. And I looked at the idiot that we talked about last night claiming that he was punched and he was harassed. He wasn't. He's a liar. And he was on Fox News lying. What's interesting about that, he was on an O'Reilly show with protesters with palm trees behind them, pretending that that's somehow Wisconsin. I often think that fake news over at Fox would lie when the truth had been better. But right from the beginning, right from the start here and with this whole thing in Wisconsin, fake news on Fox was peddling a number of falsehoods. I'll call them lies in their reporting of the citizens in the streets of Madison, only proving, you know, that the people in Wisconsin were right when they broke out in the chants of Fox News lies. You go down to the list of the things that they said. You know, the one program said, oh, yeah, you know, the Gallup poll found 61% opposed the law. You know, opposed what was the law that what Walker's trying to take away when, in fact, it was the other way around. And you could say, well, you know what, that was just a slip of tongue. But it's on and on. It's often. They falsely claim that Walker is actually doing what he campaigned on. We've heard this a whole bunch, haven't you? When nobody can show me anything where he campaigned on stealing rights from workers. Fox News aired a cropped video to suggest former NEA official said he does not care about the children. Again, you know, nice creative editing. And the list goes on of all of these. You know, I remember the Tea Party rallies that they showed pictures of where, you know, one middle of July, you see a whole bunch of people with parkas and bikinis on. It's one of those things, really, you couldn't have cropped those together any better. But again, you know, it is what it is. You've got a handful of major corporations who are controlling the message. And the message out of Wisconsin for the rest of the country, for the people who weren't there, has been it's all about these greedy workers. And it's not. It's not that these workers weren't willing to sit down and negotiate. It's that this guy wanted to steal this right. This guy wanted to just take from them. And do you think they're gonna take that sitting down? No. Amazing stuff. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Lee Fong from the Think Progress blog about the Koch brothers or the Koch brothers or however we're saying it, especially given the video or the phone call last week. Interesting stuff. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As Governor Scott Walker and Republicans at Wisconsin's Capitol turn what had been the police velvet glove into more of a state patrol steel fist, police and firefighters continue to stand in solidarity with their public worker brothers and sisters protesting in Madison. When the Capitol lockdown began Sunday afternoon, among the protesters staying after the deadline and risking arrest for the cause of collective bargaining was Maylin Mitchell. Mitchell is president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin.
Well, we're staying united with people that we've been united with from the get-go. We have firefighters actually scattered all around here. We're mingling with our brothers and sisters. We're doing what we've done pretty much every day this week. We also have cops here as well. This has been a peaceful rally from the start. It continues to be a peaceful rally. There's nobody here agitating anybody. And so I would hope that they continue to let people speak like they have for the week and continue to let us have a peaceful rally.
Mitchell says that firefighters are here to stay and see this struggle through with their brothers and sisters in other unions.
We've had firefighters here all night, all week. I mean, we're doing it in shifts. As long as people are in the Capitol, you will continue to see a firefighter presence among the other brothers and sisters in a union.
Madison Police Officer David McClurg was one of the many police officers also with the protesters risking arrest as the Capitol was to be cleared. They were wearing Cops for Labor shirts.
We came realizing that, you know, at 4 o'clock that we may be arrested and fully accepting that. We feel it's an important enough thing to do, and we stand with all the people here, and we just hope that someone in the Republican Party in Wisconsin has what it takes to realize that this is just plain wrong.
Officer McClurg says he was particularly disgusted by Governor Scott Walker admitting he had thought about planting troublemakers in the peaceful crowd of tens of thousands of pro-labor demonstrators.
I'm disgusted by it. I can't believe that anybody within the state of Wisconsin can't see that and see the lack of honesty and the immoral, you know, acts of our governor. I mean, as a police officer, as someone who upholds, you know, the Constitution of Wisconsin, and I'm shocked by it.
Dane County Sheriff David Mahoney has withdrawn his deputy sheriffs from guarding the Capitol doors, saying that his officers are not part of any palace guard and will not block the Capitol doors to the public. Wisconsin's Republican state senators have voted to fine Democratic senators $100 a day for each day they continue to stay away from the Capitol. Democrats are defending collective bargaining rights for public workers, refusing to return from Illinois until the attack on collective bargaining is eliminated. And in another development, it was reported by a protester inside the Capitol that the private security firm DCI is being used inside. Governor Walker's office did not return our call asking them to confirm or deny that report. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know, it is about money. You know, do you think you'd get a 20-minute phone call with a sitting governor if you didn't have a boatload of money? You go back, you listen to that phone call, and granted, it was a phony phone call, but Walker still thought that that was the real David Koch. And you got to wonder, you know, how many of those conversations have they had in the past, even though Walker says it's never happened? So, again, how do you get to that point where you can just pick up the phone and call a sitting governor and have a 20-minute conversation about inside strategy? And you got to have a lot of money. And the people over at Think Progress have done an outstanding job of looking at the Koch brothers and some of their shenanigans. I've got Lee Fong on the line. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I look at the pieces that you've done on the Koch brothers, and it lays it out. You know, they've done, as Richard Wolff said, they've gotten tax breaks. They put that money that they've gotten from the state into campaigns to convince people that, you know, pollution isn't bad, or, you know, acid rain isn't bad for them. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the ironic thing about Koch Industries. They cast themselves as champions of the free market. They're the biggest funder of libertarian causes. But, you know, a lot of their business is actually just based on bribing public officials and really just changing the public debate where people don't believe that a lot of the pollution has to be regulated, or that politicians will deregulate them, and they reap a huge windfall from that. So I don't think that's a typical free market, you know, acting as it should. That's really just crony capitalism at its worst.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, most people are just now coming around to finding out who the Koch brothers are. But this is a family that's been instrumental at really, I'm saying, destroying, you know, the country as a whole, if you will, with some of the things that they've done over the past.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that the prank call that you mentioned earlier, it really just was a game changer because, you know, at first, I think a lot of people in the media were able to spin it and say, okay, it's just a Republican against a Democrat, or, you know, a democratically aligned interest group. And, once that call happened, people realized that, you know, it wasn't just David Koch. Walker has an ear to the very rich, the very powerful corporate interests in this country. And this is not a story about, you know, just traditional right and left. It's an incredible class war, class conflict, if you will.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, when the imitation Koch brothers said, you know, well, we should send in some troublemakers, and you had the governor going, yeah, we thought of that. To me, that should wake every person in this country up. That you've got a sitting governor who's talking to a guy he thinks is a billionaire capable of causing some real trouble, agreeing with him.
Yeah, and he's joking about having a baseball bat. I mean, it's really true stuff. And it's kind of almost funny it's interesting and I think illuminating that you have all these teachers and nurses and other public employees sleeping on the floor of the Capitol to get an audience with the governor. But really, they should have just been impersonating, you know, executives at Goldman Sachs or, you know, the head of the Chamber of Commerce if they wanted to talk with the governor. I mean, that's the kind of people he'll just open up to and spill his guts for over 20 minutes. Because he feels like, you know, that even though Koch lives in New York City, he was, you know, his best buddy.
Yeah, I listen to that and I go, at some point, don't you just shut up? I mean, there's having a conversation, but then there's also just speaking, just going on and on and on. It was like he wouldn't stop. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was a long conversation. It kind of meandered in a weird sense, and he started talking about how he really kind of locked in this idea to crush the unions while watching the Super Bowl, and he brought out this picture of Reagan and convinced his staff it was the right thing to do. I mean, this is the kind of like really flowery, kind of weird gun language that you would maybe conceive of between, you know, someone who's trying to suck up to his boss or a supervisor. I mean, that's just what it sounded like to me. I don't know.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, at the end of it, and what troubled me is that Walker turned and said, you know, I can really use your help putting the ads out there, the $360,000 in ad Koch brothers have said that they're going to put into pushing Walker's bill. And look, $360,000 is a drop in the bucket to somebody like David Koch.
Yeah, and they're doing a lot more than that. They just announced earlier today that they're doing a 10-city bus tour in Wisconsin. And the media never asked how much those bus tours cost. They did hundreds of them in the last 2 years to promote Republican candidates on the federal and state level. And that's just one of the many bags in the Koch kind of playbook, because they've got these front groups there on the state level. I believe some of their allied groups are called American Majority. They've got organizers on the ground. They've got think tanks. They have journalists in the media that they fund their salaries, or they you know, give them stipends. It's a multi-pronged approach. So you've got the $340,000 in direct ads through Americans for Prosperity, but they've got a lot going on there, and that's really just a drop in the bucket of what they're even capable of doing.
And it's these front groups that, you know, do all of this dirty work. You know, because who could disagree with Americans for Prosperity? Or my other one, what was it, Citizens for a Clean Environment or something along those lines?
Yeah, that's one of them, the pro-acid rain group.
Yeah, concerned citizens for the environment, telling us that acid rain's not a bad thing. In fact, it's good for us.
It's propaganda. I mean, when you hire someone on K Street to lobby on a bill, that's called lobbying, and everyone recognizes it as lobbying. But when Koch pays a professor at George Mason or someone who calls themselves a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. You know, these sound like really legitimate things, but at the end of the day, when they're just writing papers to deregulate Coke's industry, to deny climate change that Coke causes, that, you know, formaldehyde, which Coke creates, you know, shouldn't be regulated as a carcinogen, which it is, that's really just lobbying because they're advancing the financial interests of Coke Industries.
Well, how does the average person, you know, how does the average guy, the average girl, how do they look at this and go, you know, Coke's behind it or these groups are lying? I mean, because there are so many of these flowery named, euphemistically named groups out there that, you know, who could be against Americans for Puppies or bunnies or anything? Who, I mean, it all sounds so logical. It all sounds so well laid out and simplistic.
You know, that's a great question. I don't have a ready-made response because, you know, you can look at their charitable foundations through the website mediatransparency.org, I believe. That's helpful, although it's not fully updated. You can look at different websites who have done some reporting on this, but at the end of the day, it's sometimes impossible to tell because they make direct corporate contributions to a university or to a nonprofit. Those are never disclosed. However, that being said, a lot of the main actors are well known, like Cato, Institute for Justice. I mean, there are a few lists floating around online. I'm not sure what the best ones to supply you with, though.
Yeah, because, you know, you look at all of this stuff, and you keep up with this, and I try to keep up on all of it. But at the end of the day, if you have the money, you can influence public opinion, as Richard Wolff's piece pointed out that we talked about a little bit earlier. You know, we give them these huge tax breaks, and they end up using it against us in forming public opinion, paying off politicians. We are heading down we're down at the end of a very dangerous road.
Let me just say this. In the end of 2008, there's only one issue both McCain and Obama agreed on. They both agreed. You know, they disagree on everything across the board, but they both agreed on the need to act on climate change. You know, McCain's campaign director, I think, Doug Holtz-Egan, went to Grist magazine, the hippie online magazine, and said and made the argument in the blog post that McCain's plan for climate change was stronger than Obama's. I mean, can you imagine that? But in the past 2 years, Coke has just pumped money into propaganda, denying climate change, you know, primarying any Republicans who would think about acting on climate change, really just shifting the public debate with this, you know, essentially propaganda type tactics. Yes. And they bought a 30% drop because now, you know, it's normal to deny climate change, not even to want action on the problem in the Republican Party. And in the polls, you've seen a drop where a minority of Americans even believe in the science anymore.
Yeah, I mean, because the information's out there. I mean, they've got all of their talking heads, all of their newspaper people out there doing their bidding. You're absolutely right on that.
And again, it goes back to their financial interests. My colleague Brad Johnson kind of estimated, although it's because they're a private company, we don't have the best data on them, but just using estimates of information that's out there, they emit over 300 million tons of greenhouse gases a year, and that's because they actually specialize in high-carbon Canadian crude oil, which is the dirtiest form possible because not only are you burning that, but, you know, to get it out of the ground, you have to use a lot of water, a lot of natural gas. It's a really dirty process, but so out of even coal companies, they're going to be impacted the most if people actually wake up and decide to do something on clean energy.
Amazing, amazing stuff. And there aren't many of the Koch brothers on the ideological left, although they love to point out there's George Soros, but there's only one of him.
Sure, and, you know, I think it's different between George Soros, who funds a lot of causes that would actually increase his taxes and increase regulations on his industry. I mean, he's not doing this, I don't think, for self-interest. And the Koch brothers convene twice annual meetings of upwards of 200 to 300 billionaires extravagantly wealthy people who all coordinate their giving along with the Koch brothers. So it's not just him, but he amplifies. If you look at his allies like Steve Schwarzman, the billionaire hedge fund manager, Phil Anschutz, another oilman, Richard DeVos of Amway, Dick Farmer of Cintas. I mean, the list goes on, and these guys coordinate their funding, and that's important to remember, even though we're all talking about Coke this week and the last week because of the prank call. And they are important, but they're certainly not the only ones.
And they are this generation's robber barons, if you will.
Yes. What's the guy's name? Gould?
Jay Gould. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half.
There you go.
You look it up, and it's true.
Yeah, it's an apt comparison because these guys, I mean, Charles Koch has compared himself to Martin Luther, the theologian. You know, he really, even though he's doing this for financial interest, he also is very dedicated to this stuff. He wants to win. He wants to crush the left. You saw that in the op-ed he wrote earlier this week. He's very proud in what he's doing.
Yeah, well, that's why we have got to band together and fight back, because even with all their money, if we could figure out a way to bring the people together, I still think we have a chance.
Yeah, well, at least people are talking about it and recognizing the structural issues in democracy. I mean, this is, if it's not the Kochs, it's the Chamber of Commerce, it's all these groups that are just well-heeled, and because of Citizens United can spend unlimited amounts, it's only going to get worse.
No, I agree. Lee, I think you guys are doing great work over there at Think Progress. I appreciate your time and appreciate all the work you guys are doing.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me on.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
You know I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Scott Walker is a cokehead, one of several super ambitious right-wing politicos who can't get enough of the laissez-faire land hallucinogenics being pushed all across the land by the secretive billionaire Koch brothers. As the GOP's gubernatorial candidate in Wisconsin last year, Walker took $43,000 in campaign cash from the brothers' corporate PAC, plus hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of support from a Koch-funded political front group. Now in office, it's clear that the Gov has also snorted several bags of the Koch's 100% pure anti-worker corporate mindset, for he's pushing maniacally to take away the right of Wisconsin public employee unions to bargain with government bosses like him. Instead of collective bargaining, Walker would reduce these middle-class workers to collective begging, a position of subservience that is the Kochian ideal. What the governor did not anticipate, however, was a jolting side effect of Koch fairy dust, a widespread public revulsion to his actions. Tens of thousands of teachers, firefighters, police officers, and other workers, plus school kids and other supporters, have filled Wisconsin's Capitol building in an unrelenting protest. And, while Walker claims he's only doing what the people want, a 61% majority of Americans say they don't want what he's doing. But there's no use trying to talk reality to a delirious cokehead. With his Capitol in turmoil, the governor blissfully said, "I hope I'm an inspiration to others trying to eliminate worker rights." This is Jim Hightower saying, before you faint from this guy's self-anointed saintliness, note another little provision he very quietly buried in Section 44 of his anti-worker bill. It allows the governor, with no oversight, to sell Wisconsin's publicly owned power plants on a no-bid basis to private corporations. Guess who's in line to profit from this giveaway? The Koch brothers.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Well, we hope you will. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, Capitol Rotunda here in Harrisburg. There's a news conference opposing Tom Corbett's $833 million corporate tax handout. Especially at a time when we're talking about a massive budget shortfall. talking about $4 billion in the hole. We're talking about giving a, he wants to give almost a billion dollars away, in corporate tax breaks. When they're talking about cutting $1 billion from education, they're starting up a voucher program that most people believe is going to cost us $1 billion. Doesn't make an awful lot of sense. In fact, to me, makes no sense. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Gary on line one. How are we doing tonight, Gary?
We're doing well, Rick. How about yourself?
I'm energized. I'm really in a good mood tonight.
I can see that. I wanted to just mention this one thing first before I get into what I want to really talk about. That was the event in Wisconsin and moving the show out there. And I only was able to catch a couple of your shows, but to have somebody out there to get an on the ground kind of look at what is really happening in that state, what's really happening to those workers, and put the facts out in a way that people can understand it, that isn't laden with continual rhetoric. I'm very thankful to have found this show, very thankful to be able to watch you on the net, and quite honestly, this is a service for working men and women all over the United States, regardless of your political background, to listen to every once in a while and get a real sense of what's happening in America to labor today. So I appreciate your efforts and everything that you guys do out there.
Well, thank you for that. It was to me one of those once in a lifetime moments that when are you going to see 150,000 people peacefully come together and do what our Constitution gives us the right to do? Go and have our grievances heard.
Yep, absolutely. So having said that, we've heard repeatedly about Governor Walker, and as he glares into the camera to tell people that there's no need to negotiate, and he's not going to because the state is broken. He's got nothing to negotiate for. Well, you know what? You've been around long enough, and I think so have I, to in the process of collective bargaining, there are a host of items that can be talked about through the process of collective bargaining that have nothing to do with economics.
Yep.
I think two of the primary things in any labor agreement, number one is seniority, and number two is the grievance procedure. And the grievance procedure is such an important piece of verbiage in a labor agreement, because without that, there is no settlement for any issue that happens in the workplace. And given the history that we're seeing here, I mean, this is a history-making event, but seeing this history, there is no grievance procedure in Wisconsin right now. The governor is making sure that process is going to be eliminated. And for all those workers that are out there listening, or for all those workers who may be on the border, they need to think about what do they do when an issue arises in their workplace? How is it handled? Right now, my assumption is that through their contracts, there is an in-depth grievance procedure to start and finish an issue so that it will eventually come to an end.
Yep.
If this collective bargaining agreement is eviscerated, which you would have it have, then that's gone. There will never be, or if there is, it'll be a kangaroo court, and no one will be able to survive in a public sector workplace.
Well, that's what a dictator wants. That's what the king wants. He doesn't want to have anyone else with a voice other than his. And he said, these are the tools that I need to do what I need to do, which is fire anybody you want, get rid of anybody you want. Maybe taking us back to the days of political patronage, where he can put his cronies in. He's already done it by firing the Capitol Police chief and replacing him with the father of the Speaker of the House. I mean, come on. How much more do you need to wake up and say this guy wants to be King Scott?
Yeah, the leopard isn't going to change his spots here. If we're watching what's happening now, what do you think will happen when the day comes? Hopefully, it never does. But if the day comes where he gets his way, this is the turn of the century all over again. We're faced with something here in New York, with something a little different. We've got our new governor here, Andy Cuomo, and he, as you can imagine, New York State has a huge public sector labor force.
And he's looking at teachers, but he's looking at it in a different way. And he's looking to attack their seniority rights, feeling that the senior teachers, for whatever reason, again, this is the rhetorical response from the right, that the senior teachers, that once they have tenure, that you can't get rid of them. And now we're going to, it's too bad that teachers that are just coming into the workforce, if the workforce is diminished, then they would have to be the ones that would be let go through the layoff structure and through seniority.
You know, that whole frame that you just brought up, that you can't fire a teacher, is utter and complete nonsense.
Yeah.
What it is the problem is not that you can't fire a teacher. The problem is you have lazy administrators who won't do what you have to do if there is, in the rare occasion that there is a bad teacher that needs to be fired. The administrator's not doing their job. It's like any due process.
That's right. The idea of tenure is just that, Rick. It's due process. It's making sure that if you have cause, that you have to prove it. And I don't see what the problem is with that. But, so that's kind of where, that's the nutshell for New York State where the teachers lie now. No worries. I don't believe there are any worries about Cuomo going off, and following his Wisconsin brother, Scott Walker. But
no, I don't think so.
I don't think that'll take place. But nonetheless, the domino effect of this, as you well know, will be spreading across the United States. It's vital importance that people get a chance to listen to this side of the story, to your reports, and to make sure that they get, as our friends over at False News is, fair and balanced reporting. And again, I want to thank you for that.
I appreciate it, Gary. Thanks so much for listening. Appreciate the call.
Anytime.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much. You know, you look at this, and he's right. I mean, we had a great week there. We were on the ground, and when I went, I was looking for chaos. I was looking for tension. I was looking for riots. I was looking for, you know, things to erupt at any minute. You know, I'm going to get into the mix. Going to, you know, have a, you know, going to put on my union thug hat. And all I found was a bunch of old ladies with cookies and a couple of guys with sweet potatoes and construction workers handing out bratwurst. That's what I found. People coming together saying, you know what, we need child care. We need health care. We need a place to have the food. You know, and I've said this a number of times. You know, they kept chanting, this is what democracy looked like. And if you looked in the inside of that Capitol where the people were holed up, that's what they did. They had a place for children. They had a place for food, for people who needed medical attention. That's what they did.
You would have laughed at the interview last night, Rick. There was a Republican and a Democrat, and the Democrat said, well, you know, the governor's playing heavy-handed, and he's keeping these people out. And the Republican said, well, the governor's locking them out because they're a bunch of pigs. Well, you and I both commented of how clean that Capitol was. Thousands of people every day, and he made a conscious effort every night and every day to keep that as clean as possible. That was just a flat-out lie. It was just an excuse, you know, to make excuses for a governor who's playing heavy-handed.
Well, I like what happened to him. The whole crowd followed him today shouting, shame, shame, shame. And Brett Halsey, the representative who let us use his office, did the class thing and escorted the Mr. Slob comment into the building to keep him from being shamed anymore. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. Stick around. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations, However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Yesterday, Wisconsin Democratic State Representative Tamara Grigsby said Governor Walker is waging war on Wisconsin families with his budget plan that calls for deep, drastic cuts to schools and public assistance programs. The Journal Sentinel reported today from Madison on Governor Walker's vow Tuesday to close their $3.5 billion budget gap by remolding Wisconsin's government at every level, slashing aid to public schools and local governments, while set up increases in private school aid, eliminating 1,200 state jobs and placing the tightest limits on property taxes that the state has seen. They go on to say to balance the budget without raising taxes or fees, the Republican governor is calling for sacrifices and changes affecting residents across the states, from students and participants in the senior care prescription drug plan to poor families receiving health care or welfare from the state. Now understand, March 8th is just around the corner. So I'm going to be interested to see what the Patriot News here in Harrisburg prints about Governor Corbett's budget address. I got to be honest, I believe it'll be an attempt like this to balance the budget on the backs of those least able to bear the weight. So get ready for that. We've got our good friend and attorney Erwin Aronson on the phone. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, glad to. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're great. I got to be honest, I'm missing Madison every day. I wish we were there on the front lines.
Well, I'm envious that you were there and I was here, but you are on the front lines, and don't make a mistake that just because you're not in Madison that the war has somehow escaped or eluded your grip. It's right here and it's right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at this budget that the governor of Wisconsin's put forward, and I got to be honest, cutting spending for social programs, cutting public school aids, eliminating state jobs, while increasing private school aid, sounds awful familiar.
Well, it sounds eerily familiar, but we need to really make sure that we don't make an error. The precedent for this started when the guy in Wisconsin took office, and his first move was to slash business taxes. After he cut business taxes, then all of a sudden, he had this crisis, and he speaks of shared sacrifice and how scary as well as disingenuous it is when the sharing and the sacrifice is all on the backs of working people and working families.
Well, that sounds eerily familiar to right here, because tomorrow, I don't know if you know this, but tomorrow at 1 o'clock in the Capitol Rotunda here in Harrisburg, a bunch of progressive and labor groups, along with Mike Sterla, are going to be holding a press conference to talk about the $833 million corporate tax breaks that our governor has approved last week. So that's kind of an interesting comparison there.
Well, it's certainly scary. Now, we have, on the bright side, Governor Corbett has made it clear that he is not about to engage in an assault on the right of working people to engage in collective bargaining. He has said clearly that he intends to go into negotiations with the unions and to bargain in good faith. Very positive, very encouraging.
Absolutely.
But we need to hear and look and see what's going on. We already know that this voucher charade, offering so-called vouchers to subsidize private schools and to some degree parochial schools with public school tax dollars, is in the mix. And all that is, and you need to be clear about this, all that is setting aside one's philosophy about supporting or opposing vouchers. Establishing a voucher program at this time is creating a new and unfunded mandate by having the state announce that certain schools initially and ultimately all school districts in a three-year period as envisioned in so-called Senate Bill 1 sponsored by Harrisburg area Senator Jeff Bacola is a confiscation of taxpayer dollars that were dedicated to private schools and put them in the hands of the privateers. That's a new unfunded mandate. It's a new program. It's new state spending on a new, totally private enterprise. And we've already heard that the governor will not increase any taxes or any fees as recently as the day before yesterday. Budget Secretary Zogby announced that to the Pennsylvania Press Club, Press Club luncheon. So I don't know how you take money away from public education in a new program that doesn't do anything about the controlling the cost of education or replacing or replenishing the dollars so confiscated. And then we have that as the starting point before we hear what the rest of the budget is. There's something scary there.
Absolutely. One of the other scary things that I, not to change the subject, but one of the other scary things that worries me is the governor has said that if right to work for minimum wage or however you want to frame it, that if that kind of legislation gets on his desk, he's willing to sign it. And I look at, recent studies have shown that this kind of legislation doesn't do what the Tinky Tank over at the Commonwealth Foundation claims it does. It doesn't do what the Heritage Foundation says it does. It actually lowers standards for everybody, again, putting downward pressure on workers.
Well, just yesterday, the Economic Policy Institute, an independent group of highly trained, highly skilled, well-respected economists, one of whom until very recent, or was a member of EPI's staff until he left approximately a year ago to become the chief of staff for Vice President Biden. EPI came out with a pair of studies yesterday, which indicates not only this so-called hokum, right to work for less, of course, legislation not do what it's advocates suggest it will do, but at least recent information demonstrates that it does exactly the opposite. It doesn't only not help people, it actually has had a negative impact on job creation, even on low-wage job creation in places like Oklahoma where they made the change. And it's an impeccable study. I had the pleasure of reading both of these studies just last night when they came out yesterday afternoon. So
information in recent history or any guide. It is a method by which to take away jobs. Yesterday as well, and just a coincidence because of the EPI, Economic Policy Institute studies coming out, the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO had full-page ads in any number of newspapers, including the Harrisburg Patriot, pointing out to Governor Corbett that right to work confers no rights upon anybody, but it does contribute, when adopted, to the race to the bottom in levels of education, in levels of intellectual and academic achievement, in levels of average pay for jobs in a state, in levels of access to health care. And it was a wonderfully instructive piece of information that everybody should have as required reading. Even the governor probably could read this one. It was all contained in large print type on only a single page of newspaper.
Maybe even George Bush should read it.
Well, George Bush could get somebody to read it to him, yeah.
But here's the thing. Let me ask you this, because, you know, a lot of people who, you know, they find a right to work. Well, who could be against that? It's so nice and flowery and, you know, who could be possibly against it? For the person who's never going to be in a union, who's never been in a union, why would it matter to them?
Well, it matters to them because a rising tide raises all ships. What we see in Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, the right to work states, even in Florida, is that the wages of people in unions are lower, but the wages of people who are not in unions are much lower. The union membership in those states is the greatest of protectors, actually. But just like a rising tide raises all ships, a falling tide lowers all ships, union and non-union alike. And in the states where right to work is in place, and I just cringe at that vernacular because it confers no right on anybody except the right to work for less money than they're entitled to. In those states, everything is down for everybody. Educational attainment is down not only for union families, but for non-union families. Access to health care is down not only for union families, but for non-union families. And indeed, because unions exist in even in those states to some degree, the people who are blessed with the union membership have greater access to health care than their non-union brothers and sisters. And that's the point. One of the things we're learning through this experience in Wisconsin and in Ohio and in Indiana and in a handful of other states is that people are coalescing around the idea of the right of unions exist because people, even who are not union members, understand with crystal clarity that the existence of unions and the right of unions to exist unfettered in society raises the value of work and the access to work-related benefits for everybody, including non-union members, and maybe even predominantly non-union members.
You know, I think my generation, you know, I'm 43. I think people my age and older understand that on a visceral level. But, you know, the younger generation, and I've told the story before, I walked into a local high school a year or so ago and had my Teamster jacket on. The kid said to me, "Oh, I see you work with horses."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Yeah, I'm a jockey." But and you know, he kind of bought it. But the reality is, you know, he didn't know. I think what's going on in Wisconsin is going to give labor the opportunity to get out there and tell their story instead of having the Tinky Tank over here in Harrisburg, the Commonwealth Foundation, tell it for them. And, you know, you look at this New York Times piece that says, you know, a third of the people polled were solidly in favor of labor. A quarter were solidly opposed. But there was that big fat middle that either were undecided or didn't have enough information. How do we reach those people? What's the what's the game plan to get those folks on one side?
Well, I think that there's something that has happened in the last 2 to 3 weeks, not merely in Wisconsin, but across the United States. The best way appears, you know, the best way to let people know and educate them and have them understand appears to be to let nutcases like Governor Kasich in Ohio or Governor Walker in Wisconsin talk about their
poison because everybody, including no less the Wall Street Journal, believed 3 weeks ago, as recently as 3 weeks ago, that the public in general in the United States was on the side of stripping people of their rights and of using the government as an agent provocateur, if you will, to strip people of rights. And the polling shows otherwise. One of the things that cynical people like me look at is the idea that the first set of budget cuts, the first frontal assault, is on education. Access to free public education, to giving kids the capacity to learn, to think, and to have a thirst for knowledge and a fundamental intellectual curiosity that is fueled by acquiring the skill sets to be independent learners, is always the first place where the attack takes place. I've said this before on this show. I'm the product of a very good quality public education that was the same for me as it was for the rich kids. And that allowed me to have access to a wonderful additional higher education at a public university. When we take away funding for schools, in so doing, we, by definition, cut funding for democracy, because an educated society, an educated electorate, educated children are a great equalizer and a great democratizer. And we need to remember to do that and deal with that and be ever vigilant about what cutting, slashing educational funding means and what reallocating educational funding by creating a new mandate on public school districts to finance private schools without replacing those funds. And indeed, while those school districts will have a statutory state-mandated cap on what they can tax, what that means to our future, to our democracy, to the idea that we might have a highly trained, highly skilled workforce to compete in a world economy, the impact is devastating and ongoing, and that's what we need to watch. But the answer to your question is, it seems to me right now that the best way we can educate people is to just keep repeating the message that we've learned from Wisconsin, that we've learned in Ohio, that people of courage can stand up and stop this, and they stand up and stop this not for the multi-rich, but for the multitude.
That's right, and they do it in an incredibly peaceful and group fashion.
Well, they try to do it in a peaceful and group fashion. We learned that part of the Republican Governors Association, of which Walker and Kasich are new active members, national plan is to try to be belligerent, to try to encourage people and incite violence where none existed and where none exists, in doing things like we learned last week. Walker was really considering, Rick,
yep,
hiring goons and thugs to incite violence in the peaceful protests in the Capitol. And then we learned further that first Walker was going to throw people out of their Capitol that they somehow or another placed in his hands, in his stewardship. Then when they learned that didn't work, he locked all the windows. So he locked people out of the Capitol building, of their Capitol building, of the People's House in Wisconsin, paid for by taxpayer dollars, for the dollars of workers. And today, once again, justice stepped in, and a jurist in Wisconsin said, absolutely not. You can't lock people out of the Capitol building, and you can't lock them in there either.
And that's a good thing. And today we saw that, and at the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Nick Milroy, state representative from Wisconsin. One of the guys who pushed his desk out into the cold to meet with his constituents, since they have put some restrictions on who can get in and how. Interesting stuff. Irwin, always great talking with you. Always great insight. I appreciate your time, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Be well, be safe, be careful, and keep an eye open on Wisconsin, but keep an eye open always on our own home, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
All righty. Irwin, thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
But they slashed our funding, they cut all our hours by Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cars, everyone yelling at me. When did I become a problem? How did the poor become all mine? The president says, tithing the bill, the only one that tithing is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make happen.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a living. Rich and poverty. For the shirt that you can't be on. Blue denim head is vain.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Missed any portion of the program? We put it up on our website for you to download the podcast, or you can get it through Apple's iTunes. Everything right there for your entertainment, your enjoyment. Got a press release from the GOP Hit Squad, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Their Workforce Freedom Initiative released a study today conducted by, you know, some bizarre group, and that it revealed that Pennsylvania, and this is a quote right from their press release, Pennsylvania is sacrificing opportunities to reduce its unemployment rate and generate new business startups as a state with among the largest burden of labor and employment regulations. It goes on to say the study shows that if Pennsylvania was to improve its regulatory climate to the level discussed in the report, the effect would be the equivalent of a one-time boost of 36,210 net new jobs. And I look at that, I go, 36,210 new jobs. Couldn't it be 36,209 jobs? And I look at that, I go, where'd that number come from? And I said, oh yeah, where they usually get all their other numbers. They reach around right behind them and they get a good grip and pop out whatever number comes to their mind. And what are their suggestions? You're going to love this. Again, it goes back to this whole idea that we need to be more business friendly. Evidently, according to the GOP Hit Squad, our regulations, our wage and hour laws exceed the federal standards. So we as a state decided that, you know what, we'd like to have a little higher minimum wage. Right? We'd like to have a little bit better than the bare minimum. So if we just go down to the bare minimum, maybe that'll attract some jobs. Instead, it says the state leave laws that differ from federal standards. So, you know, like you have medical leave or maternity leave or any of that. The state has some a little bit better laws. Not much, trust me. Just a little bit. And if you were to do away with that and go with the federal government has, which is basically nothing, other than the Family Medical Leave Act, which pays nothing, you might attract some low-wage jobs. And also it says a significant limitation on the employment at will doctrine. There are a couple of very small, tiny little things that we've decided that you just can't willy-nilly fire somebody for. Trust me, very, very small. So if we were able to, you know, to go back and, you know, just strip out all of those pesky rules, you would create jobs. And I would argue, Jake, if we just did away with minimum wage, if we did away with, the overtime, if we did away with a safety on the job, if, you know, we did away with all that, if we could allow employers to whip their employees, maybe we'd create more jobs.
The business community and the Republicans, primarily, not always, but primarily, the pro-business Republicans have always had a panacea. A panacea that comes up every time there's a crisis. Eliminate basic protections on the job, eliminate minimum wage, no prevailing wage. In other words, let's go back about 50 or 60 or 100 years, and the jobs will fall like manna from heaven. Well, I'm still waiting since 1980 for those jobs to fall. I don't know about you, Rick. Maybe one of them fell your way, but I didn't see them.
But at the end of it, you know, it comes back down to this: which side of the equation are you on? Who are our politicians doing the bidding of? And I would argue that the Kasichs and the Walkers, and, you know, we'll see what Corbett does here, that they are catering to a very specific segment of the population, you and I not being part of that specific segment, the very wealthy, of course. I would love to be in the Koch brothers' world, and I can't say, and I'll be honest, I can't say that if I were a billionaire that I wouldn't want to be like the Koch brothers. I wouldn't want to be, I can't say I wouldn't want to be invited to their year, bi-yearly or biannual, you know, meetings where they decide how to divvy up the country. I don't know that I wouldn't want that power. I don't know that if I were the emperor of a large multinational corporation that I would want one of those unions telling me what to do, because after all, I'm a self-made man. I'm king. I get to decide. I don't know that I don't know that I would be as progressive on a lot of issues as I am, because, you know, that I would be the king, if you will. It's great to have kings, if you will, but who's going to protect you from them?
I'd like to ask these kings, and I'm serious when I say this. I'd like to ask the chamber, if you were king for a day, what would be a fair corporate rate? What would be a fair corporate rate? Now, I've heard some people, so-called experts in the economy, investment experts, who advocate and have advocated for a long time no corporate income taxes. I guess my point is, no matter how low you make them, to some, it'll be too much. No matter how much you give, to some, it won't be enough. It's this almost religious fervor that they believe the market left unfettered, the miracles of the market left unfettered, will cure everything. Well, I don't know about you, Rick, but to me, that sounds like laissez-faire capitalism.
Well, at the end of this, it comes down to which side are you on? And we go back to that. Are you on the billionaire side, or are you on the side of the people who are going to make the lives of middle class workers better? And that's what it comes down to. I mean, we are in that kind of an if-then moment, because the separation between those who have and are doing very well is wider now than it's been in many generations. And the only thing that brought that back together, brought that alligator's mouth together, is collective bargaining. And the wealth class knows that. They know that when we come together and demand some of the benefits and some of the profits that we create, there's not enough for them. It's that simple. Doesn't get any simpler than that. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Wisconsin State Representative Nick Milroy. We're back after this.
Yeah.
to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As Governor Scott Walker and Republicans at Wisconsin's Capitol turn what had been the police velvet glove into more of a state patrol steel fist, police and firefighters continue to stand in solidarity with their public worker brothers and sisters protesting in Madison. When the Capitol lockdown began Sunday afternoon, among the protesters staying after the deadline and risking arrest for the cause of collective bargaining was Maylin Mitchell. Mitchell is president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin.
Well, we're staying united with people that we've been united with from the get-go. We have firefighters actually scattered all around here. We're meeting with our brothers and sisters. We're doing what we've done pretty much every day this week. We also have cops here as well. This has been a peaceful rally from the start. It continues to be a peaceful rally. There's nobody here agitating anybody. And so I would hope that they continue to let the people speak like they have for the week and continue to let us have a peaceful rally.
Mitchell says that firefighters are here to stay and see this struggle through with their brothers and sisters in other unions.
We've had firefighters here all night, all week. I mean, we're doing it in shifts. As long as people are in the Capitol, you will continue to see a firefighter presence among the other brothers and sisters in a union.
Madison police officer David McClurg was one of the many police officers also with the protesters risking arrest as the Capitol was to be cleared. They were wearing Cops for Labor shirts.
We came realizing that, you know, at 4 o'clock that we may be arrested and fully accepting that. We feel it's an important enough thing to do, and we stand with all the people here, and we just hope that someone in the Republican Party in Wisconsin has what it takes to realize that this is just plain wrong.
Officer McClurg says he was particularly disgusted by Governor Scott Walker admitting he had thought about planting troublemakers in the peaceful crowd of tens of thousands of pro-labor demonstrators.
I'm disgusted by it. I can't believe that anybody within the state of Wisconsin can't see that and see the lack of honesty and the immoral, you know, acts of our governor. I mean, as a police officer, as someone who upholds, you know, the Constitution of Wisconsin, and I'm shocked by it.
Dane County Sheriff David Mahoney has withdrawn his deputy sheriffs from guarding the Capitol doors, saying that his officers are not part of any palace guard and will not block the Capitol doors to the public. Wisconsin's Republican state senators have voted to fine Democratic senators $100 a day for each day they continue to stay away from the Capitol. Democrats are defending collective bargaining rights for public workers, refusing to return from Illinois until the attack on collective bargaining is eliminated. And in another development, it was reported by a protester inside the Capitol that the private security firm DCI is being used inside. Governor Walker's office did not return our call asking them to confirm or deny that report. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. The Capitol building in Madison, Wisconsin may not be open to the public, but my next guest is a state representative. His office is. He decided it was going to be business as usual. His office was going to be open for business. He moved his desk outside along with some other folks so that his constituents could have their voices heard. Amazing guy. Representative Milroy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
It's going great. I saw you had your desk outside today.
Yeah, we did. It's about 20 degrees out, but it was the only way our constituents were going to have a chance to have their voice heard today. Unfortunately, the governor has the Capitol on lockdown here.
You know, and as I understand, there's a court order it's supposed to open it up?
There's a court order saying that the Capitol should be open to the public. Unfortunately, they're, playing the old legal game where they're appealing the decision and trying to drag it out as long as possible.
Amazing stuff. You know, I look at this and I can't imagine this is going to bode well for the Republican Party. I got to think that the people of Wisconsin have got to look at this and this kind of dictatorial, tyrannical behavior in a negative light.
Well, I think the tide is starting to change. We're seeing a lot of people who said that they've voted for conservatives, they voted for Scott Walker, and they cannot believe what he's doing to our state.
You know, as when we were there, we spent a week there, and it was amazing people, an amazing event, and really what civics is all about. Citizens coming to their capital, having their voices heard in an extremely, in my view, an extremely peaceful manner. Just an amazing event.
It certainly has been. You know, in this business, it's easy to get cynical, but seeing the hundreds of thousands of people that have traveled from all corners of Wisconsin to let their voice be heard, I mean, it's just really inspiring for everybody involved.
But when you hear stories of bolting down the windows and starving kids and doing some of the crazy things that they're trying to do, at some point, when does sanity, on the Republican side, when does sanity take hold?
You know, I have no idea. Every day it's something new. It's something I've never seen before. I mean, bolting down the windows, trying to deny people food that are inside the building. It's just getting to the point where, you know, you almost feel like you're in a totalitarian state here. There's police officers around every single corner in this Capitol. If anybody comes in, they have to be escorted from point A to point B, and then escorted back out by a law enforcement officer. You know, I have all the respect in the world for the law enforcement officers. They're just doing their job, but I'm just totally disgusted with the leadership in this state that thinks that we have to have a police state here at the state capitol in Wisconsin.
How long have you been a representative in the state house there?
This is my second term, so I'm starting on my third year.
Have you seen anything like this in your time there? Have any of your colleagues seen anything in their time here?
No one has ever seen anything like this. In fact, my staff assistant has worked in the Capitol for over 26 years. She said she's never seen anything close to this.
Yeah, because when we were there, I got to be honest, I was just amazed at the kind of citizenship, the kind of knowledge of the system, and to have a governor to pull something like this, it seems almost surreal.
Well, it does, and, you know, it's actually, I think, a wake-up call to the progressive communities across our entire nation. We have not only people from every corner of Wisconsin, but we have people that are coming here from many of the different states around our union, and, you know, they want to be part of this movement, and I think it's going to start here. They've lit a fire and awoken a beast that I don't think they expected.
Yeah, I don't think they expected this. Maybe a little blowback, but not this. Now the Fab 14, I've gotten emails from people that, you know, the senators are heroes, they're fabulous, all this stuff. Do you have any sense of what the game plan is there? Because at some point, I see that they're going to start fining them. At some point, there's going to have to be where they come back.
Well, you know, the leadership in the Republican Senate has been playing a lot of games with the senators. Now they're fining them $100 a day for being out of state. They are charging their staff people to make photocopies on the state photocopy machines in their offices. And today they even put in charge Republican staffers to oversee Democratic offices. So it's getting to the point of ridiculous. It's like we're dealing with schoolyard bullies here.
They did what? They put Republican staffers?
They put Republican staffers in charge of overseeing Democratic offices.
How is that legal?
They can write the rules as they go along. That's the problem with the tyranny of the majority. When they control every branch of government in a state, they feel that they just have the power to do whatever they want. I think there's going to be a tremendous backlash in the upcoming elections because of this.
Well, I've seen the Democratic Party in Wisconsin has, you know, finally welcomed to the party, has decided that they're going to go after recalling 8 of the Republicans who are, I guess, right now able to be recalled. Do you see that taking any traction?
Well, I think people are outraged, and it's going to be up to the people to go back and spread the message to every corner of the state that we're not going to put up with this sort of tyranny.
Let's talk about the budget talk that he had yesterday. I watched some of it, and I got to be honest, I didn't get the greatest feeling that his party was as unified as some may hope for him, because every time he wanted an applause line, he had to nod his head so people would applaud for him. What was your sense? Were you there, I guess, should be the first question.
I was there, and what I heard from the speech was that he was going to make drastic cuts to public education. Wisconsin has always had some of the top public education in the entire nation, and he's going to increase funding for our prisons and our roads. You know, the governor promised 250,000 new jobs. I had a chance to talk to a retired state economist today. He said if the guy would have just sat on his hands, he probably would have got the 250,000 jobs. But at this rate, he's not going to reach that.
You know,
my feeling is with, you know, increasing funding for prisons, I think those 250,000 jobs he's talking about are in the license plate manufacturing sector.
Amazing. You know, when I read, because I watched it, and when I read some of the afterthought, again, you know, what I'm concerned about here in Pennsylvania is pretty much what your governor laid out, cutting education spending, you know, giving big tax breaks away to corporations, making the people who are least able to shoulder the burden, the ones that they balance the budget on the backs of. That's what worries me here in Pennsylvania, and it looks like that's exactly what your guy there in Wisconsin is trying to do.
They're pulling. This is an orchestrated effort across the nation. You know, the Cato Institute, the Heritage Foundation, they've had this on their agenda for many, many years. They're drunk with power because of the election's in November, and they're starting to implement these policies, or trying to implement these policies. During the governor's speech, he talked about entirely getting rid of the capital gains tax. I mean, that's a tax exclusion for some of the richest people in our society, while he's trying to break the back of the working man by slashing their salary and benefits.
Let me ask you, a comment came up, and it's one of those things, that an insult that one of the senators, I guess his name's Grothman,
right,
called the people, the citizens in the Capitol, called them a bunch of slobs. I spent a week there. I've never seen a cleaner place. In fact, I joked with one girl that I was going to take a picture of her on her hands and knees cleaning the Capitol floor, and I was going to send it back to her parents. I got to be honest, I'm not seeing those kids as slobs.
Well, Senator Grothman likes to get his face out there in the limelight as much as possible. He's one of these shock jockey teabaggers, and it's just unfortunate that he would use language like that, because I know you were in the Capitol and you saw the hundreds of firefighters that came through the Capitol. You saw the hundreds of policemen that stood in solidarity with other union members, and you saw the hundreds of school teachers, the people who are in charge of inspiring the next generation. If he's referring to those people as slobs, I think he has a little apologizing to do.
I think he's got some being on his knees to do. You're absolutely right. What's going on right now? I understand there's but maybe 40, 50 people left inside the Capitol. Is that right?
Right now, the Capitol is locked down. They have law enforcement officers posted at every entrance. There are about 40 people who are still in the Capitol. They're sleeping on the granite floors. They're not leaving. If they leave, they're going to have a pretty difficult time getting back in. There's actually people sleeping outside. It was 20 degrees out today, and the temperature's dropping here at night, so I'm sure it's going to be an awfully chilly evening for a lot of people.
Now, are these people able to? I'd seen some talk that they were closing off some of the bathrooms, that they weren't allowing anyone to bring food in. Is that accurate?
Well, they have. I don't think they've closed off the bathrooms. They've made it a lot more difficult to try to get food into the building. But a lot of the legislators and staffers have been working with these groups to ensure that we can get supplies into the building. So they have adequate supplies. Luckily, we don't have 5,000 people in the Capitol like we have had for several days. That's because they've pretty much locked it down, and once you leave, you're not welcome back in. But we have about 40 or 50 faithful people. A lot of them have been here for 14 straight days.
So let me ask you this. What happens when the judge lifts the lockdown? Do we see, you know, the 4,000 or 5,000 people come back?
You know, that's an interesting question. I if you would have asked me a week ago if they could have had 100,000 people show up two weekends in a row, I would have said there's no way. So who knows how long they can sustain this. The people are really fed up, and I think the more and more mistakes that they make, when you shut down a state capitol to the people who pay to keep the lights on, I mean, people are starting to wake up to this.
Yeah, I agree. Last question I've got for you. You know, I've been saying for the longest time what's happening in Wisconsin could come this way. It's moved its way to Ohio, could make its way to Pennsylvania. What do you say to the folks in our listening area? How do we fight back? How do we defend against what you're going through?
Well, I'll tell you what, people are going to have to get energized and organized, and they're going to have to fight this every step of the way. And you can't just fight it at your state capitals. You're going to have to take it to every small town in every community of every state and make sure that your friends and neighbors know exactly what's going on, because you know how the mass media works. It's tough to get every last story out there. I mean, on Facebook today, there's a, you know, going viral that they closed down the state capitol, but if you turn on the evening news, you're going to hear about Charlie Sheen. So it's going to be important for people to bring that message to every corner of their states and every small community to make sure that their friends and neighbors know what's happening to the working people in this country.
Which is why I appreciate you taking time for us. I know you're overworked, you're busy right now, but thank you so much for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick, and thanks for helping spread that message.
All righty. State Representative Nick Milroy from Wisconsin, I appreciate your time. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Members under company surveillance, public divided, even than rubber saw they hated. Walking billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account
that we never give up.
We'll be here one day longer. The people's voice is stronger.
We
have a voice for one. We will walk with respect. Keep fighting for these rights, the generation that's next. One day longer.
The people's voice is stronger.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Scott Walker is a cokehead, one of several super ambitious right-wing politicos who can't get enough of the laissez-faire land hallucinogenics being pushed all across the land by the secretive billionaire Koch brothers. As the GOP's gubernatorial candidate in Wisconsin last year, Walker took $43,000 in campaign cash from the brothers' corporate PAC, plus hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of support from a Koch-funded political front group. Now in office, it's clear that the Gov has also snorted several bags of the Koch's 100% pure anti-worker corporate mindset, for he's pushing maniacally to take away the right of Wisconsin public employee unions to bargain with government bosses like him. Instead of collective bargaining, Walker would reduce these middle-class workers to collective begging, a position of subservience that is the Kochian ideal. What the governor did not anticipate, however, was a jolting side effect of Koch fairy dust, a widespread public revulsion to his actions. Tens of thousands of teachers, firefighters, police officers, and other workers, plus school kids and other supporters, have filled Wisconsin's Capitol building in an unrelenting protest. And, while Walker claims he's only doing what the people want, a 61% majority of Americans say they don't want what he's doing. But there's no use trying to talk reality to a delirious cokehead. With his Capitol in turmoil, the governor blissfully said, "I hope I'm an inspiration to others trying to eliminate worker rights." This is Jim Hightower saying, before you faint from this guy's self-anointed saintliness, note another little provision he very quietly buried in Section 44 of his anti-worker bill. It allows the governor, with no oversight, to sell Wisconsin's publicly owned power plants on a no-bid basis to private corporations. Guess who's in line to profit from this giveaway? The Koch brothers.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
They're going to lose if we stand together. If we rise up, if you and I, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, if we come together, put aside the nonsense. Forget about the abortion, the gay marriage. Forget about all that divisive stuff. This is what's important. your paycheck, your job, the middle class of this country, the American dream. That's what's at stake here. And as they continue to push legislation to take wealth, to redistribute wealth from you and me to the Koch brothers and to the billionaire class, to the corporate class, as they continue to do that, we fall farther and farther behind. That's why tomorrow, 1 p.m., Capitol Rotunda in Harrisburg, they're going to have a news conference opposing Tom Corbett's $833 million corporate tax giveaway. Mike Sterla is going to be speaking along with a number of progressive groups and labor groups and other legislators. It's going to be worth it, probably about a half hour, 45 minutes. Well worth having your voice heard. Show up. I think it's well worth it, Jake, and we will be there to talk to some of the folks at the event. Because, look, if you look at what Walker's doing in Wisconsin, and it's what we said from the right after the election, they were going to balance their budgets on the people who were least able to defend themselves, the people who were least able to really absorb the blows. And if you look at Walker's budget, that's exactly what he's doing. Doing the exact same thing that I see us doing here in Pennsylvania. Cutting education, cutting social programs, cutting adult basic, which we've already done. And in the coming days, we're going to talk to some folks who have lost that little bit of security. And, you know, as I said about the adult basic from the beginning, this is another example of short-sighted Republican rule. The reaction from this action is going to cost you and I a bunch more money. Why? Because those people who have health concerns, who relied a little bit of health care to keep them employed, now have no incentive to go to work every day because they can't afford health care and they can't live without it. So they're in that middle, what do I do? So you're going to have that situation one day where I absolutely need the health care. I can't afford it. I'm going to lose everything I've ever worked for. So I'm just going to quit working. Go on Medicaid. Go on social assistance. And it's going to cost us a lot more in the long run. I mean, it's that simple to me, Jake.
Well, you're right, Rick. And nobody's even talking about that. And then you have a woman who was a focal point of the discussion at the rally. I mean, she has four or five different things wrong with her. And I'm chuckling because, you know, I don't know what to do other than laugh at it. Because if I don't laugh, I'm going to cry. I mean, she literally moved up to the last day. Her operation, which was scheduled a couple weeks in advance, and she said, I don't fear the operation, even though it was a major operation. What I fear is the days ahead of me. I mean, I have three or four major things wrong with her, and they're limiting her doctor's visits to four a year? I mean, this policy is just, it's barely minimal. In some ways, it's pretty much useless. It does very little, if anything, for people with pre-existing conditions. Oh, not to mention, it increases their cost 450%. 450%! I mean, the reason these people are on this program is because they don't have enough money to buy health care in the open market. And now you're raising their price 450%. And the sad part about it is, I don't know that $136 million could be described as only, but if you compare it to the size of the budget deficit, to the size of the budget, there is money there. There is no question there is money there. All they have to do is have a little political will. Oh, and maybe some of the Republicans need to maybe get a 100cc injection of humanity, perhaps?
Well, again, they have to care. And I don't believe that's something that's possible. It's about dollars and cents. It's about sloganeering. It's about campaigning. That's all it's about. Anyway, some Republicans are rallying around Walker. The Tea Party guy, Jim DeMint, Republican senator from South Carolina, was on a radio program recently and he, you know, insisted that collective bargaining has no place in a representative democracy and that public employee unions enjoy an insidious relationship with Democrats. Let me let you in on a little secret. See, unions are all about democracy. It's all these people coming together for a collective reason. Collective bargaining is the result of democracy. All the employees say, yes, we will work, we will toil for this, under these conditions, with these benefits. That's what it's about. And to have someone like DeMint say, well, it doesn't have any place. Ridiculous. But the second part of that, that they enjoy an insidious relationship with Democrats, kind of tells you where his mindset is. It's all about political payback. And the AFL CIO responded saying that that's a sad statement from someone who has no respect for people who work for a living. And it's true. Absolutely. Absolutely true. And I look at this whole attack and how the right has really taken on with this. Because it's their wet dream. This is what they've been whispering to each other in their little think tanks and you know, like giddy little schoolgirls. we're gonna get it now. Woo, it means more money for us. That's what it's about. At the end, I wish it was about more, but it's about lining their pockets and stealing from you. And what they've done is a masterful job of dividing us. You know, we had a caller earlier saying, well, you know, the people around me, you know, they've gotten hit and they've had to pay more and they've had to do this and they've had to do that. So they should too. Instead of turning that around and going, how do I stop the assaults on me? How do I protect myself? It's about how do we destroy them? And that for me, Jake, is a tough pill.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. I've met people like that. I mean, met union people like that. And you don't stop trying to educate them, but sometimes it's awfully difficult.
You know, I just sometimes wonder what it's going to take. And we've said on this program that I think things have to get much worse before they're going to get any better. Going back to the old labor saying of, you know, sometimes your stomach has to be empty before your head gets right. To me, this is one of those. This is one of those times.
Well, that's where Walker went too far too fast. Vastly overplayed his hand. And what he did, he pulled back that curtain, Rick, and people started to see, ooh, wait a minute there. You know, he uses the National Guard. He takes away my right to collective bargain, my right to maybe perhaps provide for my family. What does that mean for me? That means dire consequences. And people reacted. Many times, I mean, fear's a powerful emotion. And when people fear what's going to happen to them, they react. And this guy has really put fear in a lot of workers. And they're willing to fight and say, no, you're not doing that to me and you're not doing that to my family. And no, not if I have a breath within me. And that's great to see. I just hope it isn't too little too late.
Yeah, that's why I'm hoping tomorrow at 1 o'clock people come out to the Capitol and show their support, because I think we're going to be doing a lot of this stuff. And part of what we want to do here on the program is engage people, have the ability to bring folks out for things that are important. And I do think these kind of things are very important, to have your face seen, your voice heard, and to participate in your government. After all, this is, and I got to be honest, going to Wisconsin was kind of like, you know, some religious people going to Mecca, you know, Muslims going to Mecca or, you know, whatever, having the pilgrimage or, it was kind of like that for me. It was that moment where I said, it was that almost a holy moment where I said, you know, this is what democracy looks like. This is what it's like to be a citizen of this country. These are my rights to petition my government. It was really, it was an amazing, amazing time, because it really solidified all of those things that I've talked about, all of those things that I believed, but it was right there. It was real. And I'm telling you, folks, we can take our government back from the big moneyed people. We can fight against the Koch billions. We can fight against the investor class. And we can win. This idea that, well, you're just demonizing the job creators, nonsense. Absolute, utter nonsense. What we're doing is we're pointing out the fact that some people are abusing the system. Some people are taking the privilege that they've been given and abusing it. Now, if the Koch brothers have all these billions to be throwing around trying to influence our politics, personally, I'm a fan of saying, well, maybe we should start taxing that and using that money in a more constructive way. maybe to build the rail a line from Milwaukee to Madison that a couple of listeners said they would have loved to have taken to come see us when we were in Madison that doesn't exist anymore. Maybe to spend a little money to put a rail line from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to Washington, D.C. so it's easy to get back and forth. Maybe the Corridor One project connecting Carlisle to Harrisburg to everywhere else. Maybe that is what we could use some of those billions that are being spent to influence how we think. All the billions that are being spent to influence what we see on television. Maybe that would be a better use of the money. Yeah, just a thought. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Joe Lurie. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Loved one has suffered a workplace injury. Don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Reason and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, thanks to Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, labor is now front and center in the minds of workers. You know, but here's the thing. There have been those out there who workers have been front and center on their minds year after year. And it is those people that should be honored and rewarded. And I guess tomorrow night, our good friend Dave Fillman from Ask Me Council 13 will be receiving an award with the Peggy Browning Fund. Now, the Peggy Browning Fund is a nonprofit corporation. Its website says it's established in the memory of Margaret A. Browning, a prominent labor attorney and member of the National Labor Relations Board. President Clinton appointed Peggy to the NLRB in 94, where she served until her death in 1997. The fund was set up by her husband, Joe Lurie, and the premise is to provide fellowship for law students interested in serving and representing labor and progressive organizations as well as government service. I've got Joe Lurie on the line. Joe, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to appear.
I appreciate it. Tell me, tomorrow night, your awards banquet, You're going to be recognizing people who fight the fight for workers. You do this on a yearly basis?
Yes, we do. Well, actually, we do that not only in the year. We do it on a yearly basis, and we believe that our mission is to educate law students as to the rights and needs of workers. And it also is to tell law students that the workers' rights are civil rights and that as lawyers working for economic and social justice, they can pursue a noble calling, and it also provide them with a viable career. And as part of that education, we feel that it's necessary to bring to their attention the people who have gone before and have been heroes, indeed, in the labor movement. And Dave is one of those. He has, by his work, his daily work, really, he has improved the standard of living and the job security of the members of his union and their families. So, yeah, he is a hero.
Absolutely. Tell me about the Peggy Browning Fund. Why did you start it? Basic mission, that kind of stuff.
Well, at the time of Peggy's death, I knew I had to create a memorial for her so that she wouldn't be forgotten. She was an amazing woman. She was a union side labor lawyer. I too was a union side labor lawyer, actually, in Philadelphia. And Peggy was appointed by President Bill Clinton to be a member of the National Labor Relations Board, and she was the first union side lawyer, lawyer who represented labor unions, to be appointed to that post.
I remember.
And she loved to meet with law students and encourage them to consider the labor movement as a career. And, you know, many law students are uncertain as to whether they want to commit their lives to working for economic and social justice. And while they're attracted to practicing law to do that, there's an uncertainty about the financial rewards when, you know, these management law firms are paying six figures for people right out of law school. And we want to, you know, give the message to law students that the Peggy Browning Fund provides an opportunity to experience the joy and excitement of working for workplace democracy. And they get the experience of working for organizations such as the AFL-CIO, for Friends of Farm Workers, which are community-based nonprofit organizations. And it also understands that we try to get them to understand they could follow their passion and also make a sustainable living. This year, we, with the support of people like Dave Fillman and the labor movement and union side labor lawyers, we're placing almost 60 fellows, 60 law students who will work for organizations, labor unions, community-based workers' rights organizations, the National Labor Relations Board, and the Department of Labor here in Philadelphia.
Well, that sounds like an excellent program because, to be honest, working people need all the help they can get, especially when you see the attacks that are going on day after day to take rights away from workers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think that the line is has been drawn for a long time, and we have, and working people in the United States have been, as you know, have been losing wages. Have been paying taxes, and our taxes really have been increased in view of the fact how much the earnings of working people. And while the other side, the people who are controlling our country, they're sitting in hog heaven.
Yeah, and it's and every day it's getting worse and worse. What would you say to the young student who's considering law school? How would you bring him in? You know, because I know a lot of people who are interested. You know, right now this is the hot topic. This is where people want to dedicate their lives to progressive causes, to being a part of the solution instead of a part of the problem. You know, what do we say to the young aspiring lawyer?
Well, I think that they have to let their passion guide them. I think that nobody wants that they want to do something that they love to do. And I think if you were a lawyer or whatever you want to do, I would say to an aspiring young person that you want to do something that you're passionate about. That's the first thing. And I think that working for workers' rights and working for economic and social justice is a very rewarding life. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be able to do it during my lifetime as a lawyer representing labor unions in the Philadelphia area. And every time I would go into court and handle a case for someone and succeed in that, it was like somebody gave me a gift that my client and or the union was able to reestablish its rights and the rights that they had bargained for, and that the law, you know, permitted them to use a lawyer to enforce. And I think that if you're good at anything, and if you're good at representing people, I think you make a living out of it. I think if the country does reward excellence, and if you're good and you're working as hard as you can in your whatever profession you have, you'll make a sustainable living.
All right, but there's got to be something to be said for fighting and winning the good fight.
Well, there has to be, but you have to get into the mix before you could do it. I mean, we have as you mentioned, our website. It's peggybrowningfund.org. And if you go on that website and a law student and you look at summer positions, you will see that we are offering, I think, 57 or 58 positions this summer. And if you click on, you'll see the names of the 50 organizations that we offer them. And if you click on that, you'll see the job descriptions. And in addition to that, what we do to encourage law students to work for economic and social justice is each year in October, we have a National Law Students Workers' Rights Conference at the National Labor College in Washington.
In Silver Spring, Maryland.
Right, exactly. And last summer we had almost 200 students from all over the country. And we pay for the student to come. We pay their travel. We pay for the weekend. And each law school, we have agreed to law schools who liaison with us that we will pay for one student. And some of the law students realize the value of this, and they'll pay for additional students to come. So that's a big expense. And, you know, as you know, fundraising for a nonprofit organization is not for sissies. And, you know, we work very hard here. We have a small staff of only 3 people, and I'm a volunteer president. I don't get paid, and I make a significant contribution each year because I believe in this so well. And we're going to continue, and we're hopefully to be around encouraging law students to go into the labor movement.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's so important, I think, and I think it's something that your wife would be extremely proud of my memory of her. She was a wonderful woman and really a champion and fighter for workers' rights.
Absolutely, yeah.
Joe Lurie, I appreciate your time. I appreciate the work you guys do there. Again, the PeggyBrowningFund.org. There's a website. There's a link to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Joe Lurie's name. It'll take you right there. Joe, thanks again.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now to get let's get the news from Washington and our bureau chief out there, Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you.
What's going on in the world of Washington?
Well, there's quite a bit going on. I think to be sort of wonky about it, this idea of this 1099 form being part of this health care bill that anybody, any small business who had anything you bought, like if I bought a piece of Comrex equipment for radio, and it was over $600, I was going to have to fill out a 1099. Well, everybody agreed it had to go. President Obama agreed. The Republicans agreed. And now, just as it was about to go, there was a bill that got everybody in the House interested, or at least 270 House members. And now Ways and Means Chairman David Camp of Michigan said that they wanted to find a way to pay for the bill. And so they wanted to make sure that people actually who had these insurance exchange subsidies would actually repay the government part of this money if they, in fact, earned 400% of the poverty level. So they can't even agree on just getting rid of this form work. And that's how tied up with minutia our government is right now.
Well, it shows how and as I've been saying for the longest time, it shows how great Republicans are at campaigning and sloganeering, but when it comes to actually governing and moving the country forward, there's not much there.
For sure. and I mean, that they are just even trying to tie this up is insane.
Yeah, considering it's something they ran on.
Exactly. So that's what this is happening.
And what else is going on?
Okay. There was a lot of debate today about our position in dealing with Libya, because we heard from Hillary Clinton. She was on the Hill. We heard from the Secretary of Defense, and they both seemed to be saying different things. But according to Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, they were saying the same thing. So essentially, the defense secretary said, well, if we went with a no-fly zone, that would essentially be a provocative movement towards Libya.
Right.
Well, Hillary Clinton is saying, you know, nothing is off the table, and that's certainly something that we looked at, or we are looking at. And both sides are basically saying, well, at this point, you know, or both of those people are saying, is it provocative move? Is it something we look at? Jay Carney is saying, no, this is both the same thing. It is. They're not saying different things. Essentially, he said, yes, it would be provocative. He didn't say it in those words. But he's essentially saying the United States is looking at all options, including a no-fly zone. And he didn't say it quite in this way, but perhaps even more.
All right. And what else is going on in Washington?
And last but not least, well, I could go on for hours with many things, but the Supreme Court heard a case, and this is whether former Attorney General John Ashcroft, that was under Bush, of course, should be allowed to be essentially personally sued. And this was had to do with the way they took care of a kid who became Muslim. He was an American child. Parents were Christian, became a Muslim, taken away essentially or for questioning after 9/11, claimed that he went through many humiliations and that, and so the question is, can Ashcroft be sued for these actions? And an appeals court, 2-1, it was actually all Republican appointees, said that Ashcroft could be sued. Well, it looks like there have been other, as you know, liberal groups, including my brother's Center for Constitutional Rights, has tried to sue Ashcroft, has not been able to do so. But this is what the Supreme Court heard today. And, of course, we probably are not going to hear about that for several months.
Well, that's
and the other thing that happened with the Supreme Court is they agreed with, I believe it's the way I always get it wrong because I dislike them so much, the Westboro Baptist Church. This was a funeral that they protested with their God Hates Fag sign, and I know you're going to be talking about that a little later. So that's a pretty interesting case.
Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. I appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow night.
Thank you.
All righty, let's move along. I move along to the this whole Westboro Baptist Church thing, Jake, and it's just absolutely amazing to me.
I heard that decision come down. You know what struck me, Rick? You know, here's a decision made by the Supreme Court, and they claim that it's constitutional right. And
I said it was from the
beginning. And I did. I as tough as it is, I agree with them. But here's the thing. That's a constitutional right, but yet workers trying to organize, somehow to some people, like the governor of Wisconsin, isn't an inherent right. Even though international organizations, including the UN, say it's a human right. The comparison there just struck me that even though it's a little bit different, it's still a value judgment thing. I mean, should these people have that right? That's a tough one. That's a tough one, but at the end of the day, they have the right to express their First Amendment rights. Even though they're despicable people.
As I said earlier, at the end of this, I hate being right. This was an example of where I didn't want to be right, but it is the right decision.
But I heard commentators say the same thing I said. Why don't we just ignore these people?
That's what I said.
Ignore them. I heard a spokesman for, God bless these guys, these ex-veterans that have drive motorcycles. You know, when they start chanting, they drown them out. They hold placards up to shield the families. Other than that, you know, let's not make a big to-deal about it because they love the publicity.
Yep.
They love it. The cameras are in their face.
And understand, they love the money.
Well, that's
and that's this too. Case was over. There were millions of dollars at stake because they were suing. And again, you know, it's one of those insane things where you just kind of go, the one who's doing the worst thing is the one that's going
to
benefit.
Well, here's the thing. Don't you think they're trying to provoke people too? I mean, you even said it, you know, if it was up to you, you'd probably take a poke at them. Or worse, somebody might try to, you know, I hope it never happens, but somebody might take a shot at them.
Well, when you're talking about funerals, you've already got a hole dug. It doesn't mean that the box needs something to rest on.
The part of me says that's what they want, so they can sue people for a lot of money.
Yeah. The Supreme Court yesterday had a ruling on the AT&T case, which, again, I saw going differently. I did. The Federal Communications Commission versus AT&T, they reversed a appeals court decision that favored AT&T, giving them privacy rights. From the Freedom of Information Act, which requires federal agencies to make documents public, available upon request, of course, but contains an exemption for documents that constitute an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. So AT&T was trying to say that, hey, we're people. Citizens United made us people, so we should have personal privacy. Surprisingly, the Supreme Court said no. In fact, John Roberts wrote the decision saying, quote, it suggests a type of privacy of human concern, not the sort usually associated with entities like, say, AT&T. Going on to say, we reject the argument that because person is defined for purposes of Freedom of Information Act to include a corporation, the phrase personal privacy in Exemption 7C reaches corporations as well. So, you know, good for them. Maybe the Supreme Court made finally the right choice in all this. Also, the Catholic Church today came out and said Jews aren't responsible for the death of Jesus. So how nice of them to forgive after all these years or whatever. Kind of weird. Also, the Catholic Church came out and said that, you know what, collective bargaining, you know, those teachers, those firefighters, those policemen, other public employees, like the ones who were fighting for their rights in Ohio and Wisconsin, you know, those folks, that they have a moral choice. Unions are a moral choice, and that collective bargaining rights reflect principles of justice. That, folks, is the Catholic Church that I grew up in, siding with workers, siding with people who are trying to make their lives just a little bit better. I don't know if you saw the big news. Fox News has suspended the neuter at Newt Gingrich and Rick's Sanitarium because they've said that they're going to run for president, or they're considering it. So they've both been suspended for 60 days by fake news over at Fox because, you know, they want to appear fair and balanced, and they don't want to give, you know, presidential candidate too much exposure. And speaking of Newt Gingrich, he was at Penn on Tuesday night, and a Penn student, I don't know if you saw this, Jake, but a Penn student stood up, and this is what she had to say. She said, "You adamantly oppose gay rights, but you've also been married 3 times and admitted to having an affair with your current wife while married to your second wife." This woman, Isabel Friedman, ooh, president of the Penn Dems. She went on to say, as a successful politician who's considering running for president, who would set the bar for moral conduct and be the voice of the American people, how do you reconcile this hypocritical interpretation of the religious values that you so vigorously defend? So, Gingrich, you got to give him credit. He didn't take kindly to it. He said, quote, I'll bet almost everyone here can gather the thrust of your question. He said, I appreciate the delicacy and the generosity in the way it was framed. I hope you feel better about yourself. Not answering the question, which is what I've asked a number of times. Explain to me how it is, Mr. Moral, Mr. High Morals, Mr. Good God Fearing Christian, Mr. Hypocrite, is going to lead the country. Look, I don't have a problem. You know, people have affairs all the time. People get divorced all the time. I don't have problems with that. I have a problem with somebody who's telling me one thing, doing 3 other things. That is what I have a problem with. The last thing I have for tonight, got big news. This woman in Florida, her name is Rhonda Holder. She was upset that her child wasn't doing well in school. Her 15-year-old son wasn't doing so well. So she made him stand on the street corner in Tampa Bay, Florida, with a sign that said, I did 4 questions on my FCAT and said I wasn't going to do it. Also saying, GPA 1.22, honk if I need an education. Now she's been decried as, oh, you're humiliating the poor child. Oh, poor child. No, there's a woman trying to do the best for her kid. Something's got to work. And maybe it was this.
Do you think it might try a little harder next time?
I might. I might, because I remember the beatings that I got and made me try a little harder. So, you know, who knows? Anyway, I want to thank everybody who for being here tonight. If you missed any portion of the program, go to thericksmithshow.com, download our podcast. I'd love to hear from you, rick@thericksmithshow.com. All the comments, questions, ideas, we really enjoy it. Have a great night. We will see you back here tomorrow. Every weeknight, 9 to midnight. See you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and W.